Blog Talk Radio.
I'm on the radio. Clean up your lettuce.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident your financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of International Forecaster. When you subscribe to the International Forecaster, you get Robert Chapman's 45 years of experience, concise investment recommendations. Who needs sugar-coated excuses when you can get the hard facts and proven investment leads you can't get anywhere else? Subscribe now for a free introductory copy to Robert Chapman's International Forecaster. Experience the difference. Subscribe now online at www.theinternationalforecaster.com. When you subscribe, you can email Robert Chapman directly to obtain tailored investment advice just for you. Don't wait. Get online and subscribe today. www.theinternationalforecaster.com.
I still meet people who believe that in tough times that Big Brother will save their skin. Really, the list of cities and states that are bankrupt is growing as I speak. Let's face it, you are the first line of defense in a crisis. Do you have an extra supply of storable food and water? The stores will be empty in a matter of hours in a crisis. Look, if you're willing to face reality, call Jan LeBaron at Healthy Harvest and she can help you get started no matter your budget. Healthy Harvest carries a full line of emergency preparedness and food storage products, including 300 different dehydrated and freeze-dried foods. She has vital information on water storage and purification, emergency evacuation kits and supplies. Jan LeBaron at Healthy Harvest is in the business of saving lives. Your life, your family's. Call Jan, toll-free 888-311-8940. 888-311-8940. Call now.
I am an autonomous government agent here to steal your livelihood.
Not so fast. I'm Sovereign Filing Solutions.
And I'm the Sovereign. We're teamed up.
To bring you...
the truth without censorship.
Are you tired of being fed multi-million-dollar media lies?
Are you ready for the real story?
Sovereign Filing Solutions has teamed up with the Sovereign Newspaper to make sure you get it.
And not the BS this guy behind me wants to feed you.
Take the step, help make the change.
Oh, come on, that's not even fair. How are we supposed to rule indiscriminately if you know what's going on?
Hi folks, CT here. I want to talk to you about a great preparedness resource, tomorrowsharvest.com. Whether it's an economic collapse or nature's fury, there's no feeling more secure than knowing that your loved ones will be well fed. If it's time to bug out or just camping with the family, Tomorrow's Harvest offers high-quality, cost-effective, and long-term smart food storage. Get your free sample. The choices are great. From blueberry pancakes to cowboy chili, no one else has the meal variety of Tomorrow's Harvest. They also provide other survival necessities. Check out the various packages and customize your meal supply. Remember, there's no reason for fear today when you prepared with Tomorrow's Harvest. Go to www.tomorrowsharvest.com and tell them you're a freedomizer.
Freedomizers, welcome back here. Another great night here on Freedomizer Radio. I would be your host, Proof Negative, the big kahuna here on Freedomizer. And I'm not alone today. Since it is Thursday, I do have my trusty co-host here, Hottie and Reno. Go ahead and verify you're with us.
Hi, guys. I'm here.
All right. Thank you for joining us today. Now, in just a few minutes, we're going to be joined with Michael Stolare, who's running for Senate against Dianne Feinstein in California. So Dianne Feinstein's one of those ultra neoliberals that I don't mind fighting. So if someone wants to come on and say they're running against her, then, hey, I'm going to open up the airwaves. All right, what's on your mind today, Hottie?
Nothing much. It's been a nice day so far today. Have you had a good day, Prue?
Well, no, not exactly. I mean, I'm trying to figure out here what Barry Satoro's doing with Israel. I guess it's more important to give land back to Egypt, Tunisia, and Pakistan, like Barry Satoro is the ultimate ruler of all. I'm trying to understand here where Barry Satoro is basically saying, look, let's go before 1967 and divvy these borders back up. And last time I checked, I didn't think the United States owns Israel or Egypt or any of those countries. I thought all those countries were their own sovereign lands.
Yeah, I saw a little bit on that today. I thought that was pretty interesting. I didn't really get to go into it. But, yeah, I think that, I don't know. I think it's just all part of the UN. I think Obama has a lot of pull.
Right, now maybe we could rely on someone in the chat room here. Possibly. Maybe this is something we can get into after our guest. And our guest isn't here yet. He'll be here any minute. I just talked to him about a half hour ago. But now with this Mideast peace deal, see, I'm trying to think biblically without having to bring the Bible out. I mean, I have it here, but I don't want to be looking for the verses I need to find. And then our guest shows up as soon as I find it, but When the Mideast peace deal happens, I'm not sure if Israel is supposed to sign up for this peace or not. I know that everybody's supposed to love whoever the leader is that gets the peace deal done, except for Israel. Israel's supposed to rebuke him. But in any event, we'll be getting into this here next hour, since my guest here is officially in the building, so I just want to stall for a minute here, let him get situated and set up, and let him make sure his water dish is full, just like mine is. And, let me go ahead and introduce him now. He's running for Senate, of course, against Dianne Feinstein in California, and he's definitely definitely one of us here as far as fighting for truth on many different levels. His website is michael-stolare.com. That's S-T-O-L-L-A-I-R-E. Michael, it's a pleasure having you join us again.
It's an honor.
For the first time, I should say.
Then you just promised that I'm going to have to have me on again. That's even better.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. Anyway, a lot
already
of people
committed.
Might not have heard of you. You just recently announced that you're running for Senate against Dianne Feinstein. And I thought Dianne Feinstein was just doing an awesome job. Doesn't everybody like liberalism?
Well, as a former clinical psychology major, I can tell you that in maybe 3 to 5 short steps, I could prove to you that liberalism is a synonym with insanity. But I don't think we want to go there.
No, probably not. I mean, if we have three liberal callers a month call in, then that's still probably too many. But in any event, What is it about liberalism that these people try to bash us over the heads with, like we really want it? Now, let me just say this. Going back to 2008, I don't think it was that the world was enamored with Barry Satoru. I just think they hated George Bush and John McCain 100%. Offered no change whatsoever, so they had to go to something different.
100%. I mean, I actually said this yesterday. First of all, I want to kind of comment what you had before about, you know, what is it about liberals and them, you know, bashing us over the head with it, and eventually, maybe if we hit them over the hammer enough times, they'll understand that evil's fine, you know? You know, that I believe that this is not a new tactic. It is a tactic that was used in the 1940s by Joseph Goebbels when he implemented the big lie, and it's a form of brainwashing that I think, I mean, I could talk long and hard about it. I studied it. But we see it every day in mainstream media.
Well, I know it started a renaissance, if you will, with liberalism in the 70s with Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, that worked out so well. You know, I see these interesting coincidences about me going down to the corner of Moore Park and Laurel Canyon here and paying $5 for gas. And I love the fact that our unemployment hovers around 8 to 10% and 50% of Americans on food stamps.
Yeah.
Epic win, right? We're doing
well,
so good.
Well, this is what everybody wants, right? I mean, everybody's dream is to be old enough to have food stamps and Section 8 housing, right?
Yeah, and hey, in my state, they just hand out debit cards for welfare and food stamps, and they tend to use them in strip bars and lots. That was the latest thing. Hey, let's just spread the wealth.
Yeah, I was just covering this yesterday here. And I'm going to let my co-host try and get a couple questions in here, too. But when I think of welfare, I mean, I understand that people stay on it a little bit too long, and I'm being nice about it here. But
right.
We had a guy that I covered yesterday, a 30-year-old guy, that thinks it's his right to have food stamps and welfare because he says he's an adult baby. I don't know if you caught that article, but he went to the Home Depot. He built his own crib. He's building himself a high chair, but he walks around in a diaper, and his roommate feeds him a bottle. And we pay him welfare and food stamps.
It's the Obama boy. Check it out. This is the next spokesperson.
Is this some
we'll
kind of a fetish?
Soon.
Yeah, well, they were on the TV show National Geographic's Taboo, and so their lifestyle was put on full blast.
Great. Well, we're just seeing more of the moral and ethical decline of America, and the walls falling in around us. You know.
But why do you see that we're in such great decline so fast?
Well, I said this yesterday. You know, my cliche line is that. You know, certainly we could pay a lot of attention to the $14 to $15 trillion of debt that we have right now, but I really believe that the largest deficit in America right now is a deficit of leadership, courage, honesty, integrity, and excellence. Because
right.
If we had that, we wouldn't have the other stuff. And typically, I engage yourselves and your listeners and every liberal that's out here. And I mean, I'm calling you from North Hollywood. This is liberal as it gets, right? I just invite them to attempt to write down today the biggest issues that cut, and then I ask them to understand that if we went back to the law of the land, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, right, how many of these problems would disappear almost overnight? We just have to do some very basic things. We have to slam on the brakes, turn around 180 degrees, and start running like hell in the opposite direction, in my opinion.
Well, hey, I couldn't agree more, but we're at the point of the United States where we have illegals fighting for affirmative action.
Well, I just posted, that was my blog today. I tend to cyber-stalk Dianne Feinstein, my opponent, to a certain degree, and today she decided it would be a good idea, you know, to get more federal judges to handle this surge of, I mean, you're going to be shocked by this, but there's been a surge of crime on the border states.
You're kidding.
Okay.
You mean Montana's just going crazy and North Dakota and Idaho?
Yeah. I mean, that's what's next.
Well, they said that the Canadian border is much more deadly than the Mexican border, even though the city of Juarez makes Beirut look like a children's park.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, we're worried about terrorism left and right, but you know as well as I do that I could go down to UCLA.
The thing is, terrorism does come from the left and come from the right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if we don't secure our own borders, right? I'm not worried about airplanes. I'm worried about our constitutional rights being impacted. I'm a constitutionalist and a Jeffersonian. I think this TSA thing, I think it was kind of blown out of proportion in the media, but the reality is it is a direct violation of the Fourth Amendment. And here we are getting groped and scanned and turned into basically soft porn.
Thank you.
You know? And instead of, you know, how about not punishing us, you know, innocent people? I mean, does it say that somewhere, that you punish innocent people without a trial or something like that? Is that where we're headed with this?
Right. You can have your items stolen, and then they can erase the videotape to prove that they, or to not prove that it was stolen.
I think these guys take it home, and they upload it on their computers. I think it's some form of entertainment for them, something like that, you know? This is how twisted and disgusting it's become, and I think the same thing could be said of what just went on in Indiana, of all places, where they're now allowing cops to just break in and, you know, do what they want without any warrants.
Right, but all someone has to do is say, I'm a cop, stay in your room, and now they have no choice but to stay in their room, and if they get broken into by someone that's not a cop, then, hey, that's your fault for not believing that they were a cop.
It's a direct violation of the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. It's disgusting.
Right,
that's
and
all.
Do you see something that's like it. This on the table in California?
In California, you know, what we're talking about, I think you were going back. Let's take a step back. You're saying that we're on the precipice of destruction as a sovereign nation. I happen to agree with you. I think the way I envision it is we're like that in a Hollywood film where there's that car that's kind of teetering on the edge of that cliff. And if one of the people in the car moves forward about 5 or 10 degrees and it goes over, this is the way we're at right now. And it's because, you know, we're not paying attention to our generals when we're asking the brass, you know, our military, what the greatest the threat to the national defense is. And they said, hey, it's the $14 to $15 trillion we owe to our enemies overseas. You know, can't you see China and Russia and OPEC basically getting an apple pie and, you know, just starting to cut it up into little pieces and say, yeah, I'm going to take California. You know,
right, and at
there's
that point, you can't really argue with them when a country is nice enough to loan you trillions of dollars so you could just give it to people.
Exactly.
Hey, if China said, hey, we want Hawaii, I really can't see anything wrong with that. As much as I'd hate to see it happen, not us, but our government decided to blow the money and you can't blame another country for wanting their money back.
Yeah, they're creditors, and if we ran our country like a household, it's like a Visa card, except the Visa card that we have is run by Geithner and Bernanke, and they keep on raising the limit.
Well, not just that, but when it comes to the Republicans and Democrats, between Barry Satoro and John Boehner getting together, and it's like we owe $14 trillion, and basically what it looks like is they're debating on whether or not to cancel the Sports Illustrated monthly or weekly issue.
Yeah. Well, the reality is that what we've allowed to happen is what, you know, Thomas Jefferson and the remainder of the founding fathers warned us about, that government, if left alone, would grow, and politicians, if left alone, would decide that they would want to be American royalty. And there's you know, the middle class has been destroyed, and what we have is, you know, you've heard the famous road to serfdom that sat on Ronald Reagan's bookshelf, and we've walked down that road, and we've arrived. We're here right now. We don't have to worry about the road to serfdom. We already traveled the road to serfdom. We're here. So this is what I would say to you before we give up Hawaii and things like that. My number one issue happens to be illegal immigration for a variety of different reasons. Number one, we're a country of laws, not men. That's what John Adams had to say about it, and I happen to agree with him. But if we actually did something, if, you know, we talked about this deficit of leadership and courage, if we actually did something about securing our own border, and I mean the entire border, not the 800 feet of fence that Obama says is done, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we actually did something about that, like enforce the federal laws that are on the books and make it a felony crime for small businesses and employers in general to employ illegal immigrants and slap a 5 to 10 year felony sentence on them with $10,000 to $25,000 per infraction, And then
right.
I started from the Canadian border and moved southward and just start random audits and making sure it was in the media, you would see a lot of illegal immigrants start running like hell to Mexico. This is just one.
Well, we
component.
Almost had that in Arizona, but for some reason Barry Sotaro decided to fight Arizona, and Jan Brewer basically gave up and said, fine, I'm just going to listen because I'm tired of fighting it.
Yeah, that some reason, if I may interject, is because he wants to implement amnesty in the form of the DREAM Act, and just like the
yeah.
Emancipation Proclamation led to African Americans voting Republican for many decades, if not centuries, he's trying to create 10 to 20 million new Democrat voters so the Democrats remain in control for years to come. This is the reality behind the DREAM Act. It has nothing to do with the American dream or helping out poor kids. It has to do with making sure that tyrants and American royalty, like Barry, stay around for a good long period of time in many different faces.
Well, there is Senate Bill 679 that if Barry wins
yeah.
in 2012, they
yeah.
plan on adopting this in order to give Barry as much time as he needs after his 4 years are up to run the country as it
yeah.
needs to be.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Chavez maybe, you know, acted as a consultant on that one, you know. Not
mm-hmm.
sure. Probably. You know, but let's take it a step further. We build a Great Wall of Mexico, make sure it's titanium steel, goes across all four border states. Has to be all four, right? And
right,
then
but
we
as
put
we
rip
learned
barbed
from,
wire on it.
From Building 7, they can come down with fire.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so something easy. All right, go ahead.
Yes, build the Great Wall of Mexico, electrify it, rip barbed wire, patrol it with the National Guard, attack dogs. I don't care if you use landmines, whatever it takes. If the amount of border guards is not taking care of the job, then we slowly but surely increase the amount of border guards until the border is completely secure. Now, it's an estimated $100 to $300 billion that this country loses per year to illegal immigration. Let's just multiply that by 10, and we just came up with $1 to $3 trillion, and we start paying off the debt, and at that point, we tell China, OPEC, and the rest of our creditors to go straight to hell. And then we go out to Hawaii on vacation, you and me. What do you say?
Okay, yeah, no problem. Before they start fighting for it, we might as well pick the last rambutans and lychees off the trees.
Yeah, you know, here's a radical concept, paying off the debt.
Hey, I'm in favor of what Ron Paul said a few days ago with, hey, if we have to get rid of the debt by selling gold out of Fort Knox, then we do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think his son has a great idea. I like Paul Ryan's budget better than Obama's budget. You know, spending $5 trillion is better than $10 trillion. But I agree with his son that we've got to get rid of entire departments of government that shouldn't be even around. I believe government should be staying out of our lives, and that means that there shouldn't be a Department
of Education.
Well, we can
save tons of money by getting rid of the TSA.
Say it again?
We can
TSA?
Save tons of money by getting rid
the
of the TSA.
Yeah, the Gestapo should go. There's no doubt about that. You know, we get rid of them. Get rid of the Gestapo and Himmler, you know, Janet Napolitano.
Mm-hmm.
Get rid of the Department of Education. Get rid of the Department of Energy. Get rid of the Department of Housing and Urban Development. We're talking about trillions.
The Tsars all right.
Well, I believe Tsars belonged in medieval Russia. I think so, too.
So Cass Sunstein could collect his unemployment.
Yeah, exactly. Now, his unemployment I'd pay for. Same goes for Barry.
That's true.
I'll personally pay it.
And I'll pay for Dianne Feinstein's, too.
Great. I personally, you know, on my side, personally love that. We need
now,
to
are you running as
people.
An independent or a libertarian or
no.
a Republican, or what are you running as?
No, a Republican, yeah.
Okay.
Conservative Republican, yeah.
Okay, because one of the issues, that, and I covered the Ron Paul conference here from Vegas this past Tuesday, and I guess what I'm afraid of, and this is the general consensus of people in our feeling here, is that we want to register as a Republican, but we're just
sure.
scared that we're going to get stuck with some sap like Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney that we really don't care about.
Yeah, I'm after Trump and Huckabee and, you know, well, after the people that ran, you know, that fell out of the race recently, I became very discouraged, to be honest with you, sir. I mean, who's left? Where's that strong candidate? I mean, I'm a spoiled brat. I'm waiting for Reagan 2 to basically kind of show up on the scene.
Well, does this
I just
mean
don't
that Ron Paul can finally come to prominence, and they'll Rush Limbaugh and all them will have no choice but to cover him?
Yeah, well, I believe that the presidential debate, right, came down to Ron Paul and Herman Cain. These were the two prominent figures.
Right.
As long as, you know, I can tell you're a Ron Paul fan, and there's nothing wrong with that. As long as he presents himself well and presents himself in a powerful fashion against a more youthful opponent, he does have a shot. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, the only issue I have with Herman Cain is if someone has a background of playing with the Federal Reserve.
Bingo.
And being a high-up muckety-muck there, to me, that means he's going to protect his own.
Yes, we need an outsider. Any establishment person, you know, and I meant to say this previously, so I'll go back to it. I consider John Boehner, I mean, the difference between Obama and John Boehner is minor. They're establishment, and they're American royalty, and after they're done treating the serfs bad, they go behind some mahogany doors, and they get out some brandy sifters and kind of laugh at the peasants. This is the way I look at them.
Hey, you're right.
And if Boehner had some guts, he would have turned off the lights. I mean, if I was the guy at the wheel, which, you know, I really would have loved to have been in that situation where he had the capability to say, yeah, we weren't bluffing, and just walk around and start turning off the lights and saying, yeah, too bad, man, the federal government just shut down. It's on your watch. And it's great, because if we're doing nothing, then your capability to do destruction to the sovereignty of America is completely gone. And so we'd rather be shut down. Then you're not as destructive. Go away. Go home.
I would love
Chicago,
to see
man.
Them have to negotiate by way of candlelight. I would have loved to have seen that.
Hey, it was good enough for Abraham Lincoln, I think. Let him read some books by the campfire.
Hey, exactly. Javi and Reno, go ahead if you want to come in with a couple of questions. And then after a couple of questions, we got to take a break here in a few minutes.
Okay. Yeah, I have a question for you. What are your core values?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you read my biography, it's real quick. Excellence, honesty, and integrity. Encourage. Okay. That's it. I think that will get me through it.
Okay. And do you believe as strongly as Congressman Ron Paul in the Constitution?
You're talking to a strict constitutionalist and a Jeffersonian. I've got two heroes in politics as Thomas Jefferson and Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, because he led us out of a scenario like we have right now. We just need to rekindle the American dream. We need another miracle on ice right now, except it's not snowing.
See, and some of us are a little too young to really get into what Reagan did.
Yeah, I know my history. I'm only 35.
Shell here of what Reagan's aura did for everybody.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. It was charisma and that feeling that, you know, everything was okay is what I, you know, this is a, you know, the era that I grew up in. You know, I was born in 1976, so, you know, I started off with, you know. Say it again?
You said you were born in 76?
Yeah, I'm 35.
Oh, wow.
The Reagan era.
I'm not used to that. Huh? All right, I'm 38.
Yeah. But I remember those days well. I mean, you just knew that everything was taken care of and, you know, that with that guy in there that we weren't going to get hurt. And we were safe and we were going to be led into a time of prosperity. And that's what I've said a million times to people. It doesn't matter if they're libertarians, conservatives, whatever it might be. I just say, remember, before anybody labels you, you're an American first. And all I want you to do is put your differences behind you and the prosperity in the future of America and future generations of Americans in front of you. Think about what's best for them. And the reason why I got involved in politics, as you guys probably are aware if you did some homework, is I'm not a career politician. I'm a small business owner that simply... Say it again?
No, exactly. That's why I reached out to you and tried to bring you on. You're the kind of people that we're interested in supporting.
Well, it's because Thomas Jefferson called us civilian legislators. It's not supposed to be 99.9% lawyers in Washington, D.C. running the show that are all elitists. You know, in the good old days, Davy Crockett was in there. I don't even know if he could spell Congress or write it out. He represented Tennessee better than anybody else that I could think of because he was a civilian legislator. Like Thomas Jefferson said, we need people in there like you and me that know what's best for our area, and we implement that. But how can you know what's best for your area in the current scenario when nobody even goes back to their district or their state. They spend all their time in Washington, D.C. 90% of the time, they're not picking up the phone to do interviews like I'm doing with you right now. They're picking up the phone to get down on their hands and knees and beg people for money so they can win the next time. We need to
put
a time limit.
Let me see if you know anything about this one. Last month, right before Easter, Harry Reid and a bunch of other senators spent what should have been a holiday weekend with their family. They spent it in China. And the whole situation was classified and top secret. Any clue what they might have been doing over there? Any thoughts? Because the last thing I want to see is Michael Stoller having to go over to China to try to beg for money, or I don't know what they're doing.
Well, I mean, my stance on China is basically, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm in alignment with this individual because from a personality perspective, he's kind of abrasive to me. But I think that when Donald Trump was in the race, he was basically there just to kind of show the other candidates, here's what the people want to see. They want to see a people with guts come out and basically say the truth, make a bunch of mistakes, but at least lead by example to a certain degree and say how they feel and not be wishy-washy on any of the issues. Hopefully I'm coming across like that right now because I'd never go to China. They're the enemy. Why go to Beijing?
I'm not going to say they're the enemy, but they're definitely not our friend. And to me, it's
they'd love to see us go down.
Yeah, basically. I mean, that's what their motive is. And, I mean, I guess everybody could coexist, but no, I don't want to coexist in a new world order.
Right. So with all due respect, you disagree with me. You said that they want us to go down. So they're number one.
Yeah.
Isn't that the enemy?
Well, I guess depending on how you look at it, but if they
I don't mean
I'm going to
take up arms against
whatever
them.
It is, and see, but I guess my point of view is if we didn't borrow the money that we did with them,
right?
Then yeah, they'd be considered the enemy. But if they funded our operations, to me that would think that hey, they're our friend.
Right.
It's kind of a strange situation where you'll see. In the same newscast, you'll see China both brought into a positive and a negative light, both at the same time.
Yeah, I appreciate the fact that they funded our, bridges to nowhere and all that wonderful butterfly exploration
in Alabama. Afghanistan wherewithals.
Yeah. I've got strong feelings about the wars overseas. I really do. But I, bear with me on this, but, I'll give you the 3-minute spiel that if we did what we said about illegal immigration, right, now we just paid off a minimum of $1 to $3 trillion of our debt in a decade, right? And then we start using supply-side economics like we did during the Reagan era, except the 2011 version, and we cut taxes across the board 25% for everybody, give tax breaks and credits to entrepreneurs, make sure that Chinese goods and services that we don't allow them to manipulate their currency, right?
Right,
and we make sure that we're competitive with them, and what will end up happening if we implement that is the creation of between 5 and 10 million jobs within the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start paying back all of the debt between stopping illegal immigration and actually creating a boom economy within the United States, because I don't think there's a country in the world that has the American entrepreneurial spirit that will create these ideas about new products and services that are in need, because the Chinese simply steal ideas and reverse engineer other people's ideas and make them cheap using slave labor. That's not entrepreneurialism. That's stealing. That's thievery, and I think that's evil. So we do that, and we just pay off our debt, and we basically say, hey, thanks for financing us. It's just like somebody giving me a loan to start a business. I'd walk in and shake their hand, Hey, thanks for giving me $1.5 million to start my technology company here in, Southern California. I paid it back and, have a nice life. I don't need you anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
And I strongly believe that if we were able to get our house in order and we put tariffs back on the goods that are being shipped here, that the slave wages, in essence, would have to drop because, hey, we're not going to buy the Chinese goods.
Yes. I'm strongly putting tariffs. I'm all for free trade. But, when you take the constitutional oath, to protect America, its citizens, and from enemies foreign and domestic. Notice it doesn't say China. It doesn't say OPEC. Right? let's start drilling for our own natural resources right now. And if we're going to invest money, let's privatize all the renewable energy resources like nuclear. And you know, it's a bad time to talk about nuclear, right? Wind turbines and and geothermal. It's, you know, something that is if we tapped into geothermal and made it, you know, available in a method, we'd have a limited energy source for the remainder of all time. And so we put all our money in strategic renewable resources, and then we stop drilling. And then we're energy by the year 2015.
One of the things I don't want to fund anymore is George Soros.
Yeah, he could be eliminated. Yeah, if he died, he wouldn't really cry or lose any sleep over it.
All right, yeah. I'm up against a break here, so I'm going to grab a break in about 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
Hottie, any questions
yes.
you want to give Michael a teaser and let him think about the answer when we and then when we get back, he'll answer.
Okay. What do you think or feel about the California economy and the California health system?
Okay. Well, that's
a good
question for Michael to think about here. So, Michael, we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Lindsay Williams on Freedomizer Radio.
Proof negative. I love the title that you use on your radio. I've thought about it ever since we talked on off of the air the other day. And I'd say that's an excellent title for a talk show host.
In today's world, being prepared is on everyone's mind. You're being told every day to prepare yourself. Okay, being prepared is one thing, but how are you preparing? Is the food you're going to eat something that you'll really enjoy? You know, comfort food. Or is it just something you'll eat for the sake of eating? After all, who cares about taste? You do. And at Tomorrow's Harvest, it's all about variety, taste, and a larger portion for less money. At Tomorrow's Harvest, you'll find 85 varieties of prepackaged meals, or you can customize your own family's menu. You can choose what you want, and they'll put it together for you. You choose what you and your family will eat every day. You'll find entrees like lasagna, beef stroganoff, salmon, ground beef, steak and chicken, and don't forget real milk, the kind of food that, when you need comfort, it's there. And preparation is as easy as 6 months, same as cash. Prepare today with Tomorrow's Harvest in Bountiful or online at tomorrowsharvest.com. Tomorrow's Harvest, a better taste in being prepared.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you will ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Val Villano. Freedomizer Radio. Thursday night, 9 to 10:30. Saturday, 4 to 6 Pacific Time.
Freedomizer Radio.
All right, and on that note, we're back. Proof Negative here, and my co-host, Hottie Farino, or Hottie in Reno, I should say, and my guest, Michael Stolaire. And what happened to the microphone here? There we go. Okay. All right, we're back here, and a couple of questions were posed to you there, Michael. So if you want to cover that, go ahead.
Yeah. You were asking about the Californian healthcare system?
Yes.
The economy and the healthcare system, yes.
Oh, my goodness. Well, the economy is trash. I mean, we're bankrupt. Nobody has just got the guts to actually say that. You know, there's just it's just a matter of time before, you know, I don't understand. I mean, there's no worse sequel that I can think of besides Terminator 4, right? And, of course, Jerry Brown 2. So that's what we got right now. And I have no idea how the guy got back into office. I think it's, you know, a perspective that shows how, you know, again, as I said earlier in this conversation, how liberalism could be interpreted as being insanity. Because here we go, Jerry Brown again. And his idea is, we're all oppressed, we're all facing tyranny, and what we want you to do is make it uncomfortable by raising taxes about 10% a year. Let's go down Ventura Boulevard. It's like a ghost town. One by one, I'm seeing every small business on Ventura Boulevard, which used to be full of life, and Sunset Boulevard, where on a Friday and a Saturday night, you just couldn't even walk across the street. It was like a mob scene. And now it's dead. It's a ghost town. Okay? It's a testament to the failed policies of this administration and the pawns that are on the table. I consider my opponent to be a pawn of the Obama administration. As soon as Obama says that he thinks it's time to reignite the Dream Act, then Dianne Feinstein and Waters and Boxer and Pelosi, all in lockstep, like Nazis, follow their commander.
Mm-hmm.
What we need right now is American patriots to step up and basically say we're going to do what's better for the American people. The Californian economy is bankrupt. I could go on and on as to why it's bankrupt, but we have a state that's bankrupt. It's a matter of time before Jerry Brown gets in front of a press conference and, you know, paints on a fake sad face and says, wow, you know, we've had no other choice but to go to the federal government and ask for the entire state of California to be bailed out. So that's my statement about the state of California and its economy. However, if we do what we said, see, because ever since, for example, NAFTA was signed in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
When NAFTA was signed in 1999, it benefited Canada and Mexico. I was talking about the oath of the Constitution. It doesn't say that I'm going to protect Canada and Mexico. I guess Bill Clinton didn't understand that, right? But it's on both sides now. Remember that the House was ruled by Newt Gingrich, a guy we were just talking about. And because these guys worked together, little pals, decided to pass NAFTA, ever since 1999, we've been losing $50 billion a year to illegal immigration alone.
Let me just ask you, wasn't NAFTA signed way earlier than 99 while Clinton was still in office? Because I thought the first Bush got it started, and then Clinton pretty much took it over when he... Because I remember that was one of the first things that he signed when he took office in 93.
Yeah, the origination of NAFTA and NAFTA and its final revision, I believe, and you can correct me, was signed in approximately 1999.
Okay, I'm not going to debate that.
Yeah.
We're all in agreement here that it's something that needs to get we need to get rid of.
Yes, and I would say that instead of arguing about the exact date that NAFTA was put into place and implemented. You know, that we do a little multiplication. We just basically say that was, in certain terms, an act of traitorism against the United States because it sucked jobs and money out of this country in huge numbers. And if we do some simple multiplication, that if we, let's say, you know, we agree that it was 1999 and we're losing $50 billion a year in California due to NAFTA because of illegal immigration and the amount of costs of paying for welfare, paying for tuition. As you can see, number one issue on my plate is illegal immigration because of what it's costing us. But if
absolutely.
We do the simple multiplication, say it again.
Oh, I just said absolutely. Sure. I'm agreeing with you. I didn't mean to slow you down.
No, well, yeah, nobody ever does. So if we do the multiplication, you take the $50 billion and we multiply it by 10, let's say it's just been a decade, and we all know it's been more than a decade. Then we have the exact number, the $500 billion that California is in debt. Okay? That's why I want to concentrate entirely on stopping illegal immigration and then a re-education of California as to what being an American is. And I was brought up on a chicken farm in upstate New York. You know, you asked about, you know, my core values.
Hey,
courage,
I'm a Long Islander myself, so maybe that's why we get along.
Yeah, well, yeah, don't worry about it. I mean, I'm just a, you know, I said yesterday, you know, I'm a reformed, you know, redneck that's been, you know, passed out here to California. That's what it comes down to, you know. But the ethical and moral values that I was brought up with stay to me this very day. Okay? And you got to, when I make a decision on a daily basis, it can be a decision about whether or not illegal immigration, you know, is a good idea, a bad idea, or, you know, any of these issues that we're talking about. But my first decision to myself is, you know, I'm one of these guys that are becoming slowly but surely, they're declining in number here in America that you'd call a good Christian. And I say to myself, would this be a good thing to do, or would this be supporting evil? This is how I make my decisions on a day-to-day basis. And every time I turn on the news and looking at it, you know, on mute in the corner of my eye here, I see this man in the White House, for example, on a day-to-day basis, doing things that I consider to be evil. Our allies are very clear, and yet he decides that he's going to tell another sovereign nation, Israel, supposedly our ally, that they don't own their own land. What would we do if somebody like Canada said, yeah, you know, we disagree about Canada. You know, that 54-40 or fight thing that we all learned in American history, you know, it probably should have been, you know, 48-60. So we're going to take the top part of California away from you. What would we do? I consider this an act of evil. And to be honest with you, I consider our president a traitor. I think he should be treated like a traitor, charged as a traitor, and put into Gitmo with the rest of the terrorists. That's where he belongs, not the White House.
So go ahead, Hadi. I'm going to let you get a couple questions in here because I know I took a lot of time earlier.
Yeah. No, you didn't take him a lot of time. Yeah, you know, my major concern, I'm actually from L.A. And,
oh, boy.
And all my family still live there. What I'm really concerned is the health system. I'm really concerned about that because everything's shutting down. I mean, the state workers got cut. I mean, it's just getting really bad in California.
Isn't Obamacare great? Yeah, I didn't dodge that question, by the way. First of all, you got to take a look at Obamacare. The first thing, again, is it good or is it evil, right? I don't know. But from a constitutional level, it's a direct violation of the Commerce Clause of the 10th Amendment, and it's forcing the states to purchase a good or service, and therefore it should be put into the shredder and burned. If you want the healthcare system to get better in California, everybody needs to get behind. You know, I've spoken at the 10th Amendment Center here in California. They're a great organization. But we have to understand that states' rights are very important, because the federal government was not in place to turn into basically what something that Joseph Stalin would be, you know, proud of. It was just supposed to be there to control interstate commerce. And it's grown into this mammoth, ballooning, out of control, I don't know, hydra, you know, whatever you want to call it. The state of California's got to step up. In this case, all states should step up like Arizona did, right? And basically say, hey, we know our rights. We know what the 9th and 10th Amendments say, and you can't do this to us. This Obamacare
thing,
we're
not going to
implement.
We have one of our people who are very adept to the regulations and laws, and they're assuring me that 1996 was NAFTA, 1999 was Glass-Steagall.
Ah, that must be confusing. Yeah. So even better. More multiplication, more billions of dollars lost for California. So I stand corrected on that. So the healthcare thing, we've got to repeal Obamacare. First step, right? We got to get rid of this idea of people that are. I mean, you understand that doctors are fleeing this country in leaps and bounds. All the best doctors are saying, "Well, the heck with this. We're not even going to stay in the United States. We're going overseas." Because we're not going to work for nothing, and we're not going to be opposed to, you know, we're not going to allow ourselves to have tyranny and oppression be placed upon us, and so we're going to leave the country. That includes California. And I believe that if they actually took a close look at the malpractice institution so that you don't allow, you know, Joe Smith or Jane Smith to, you know, litigate against a doctor for, you know, dropping a scalpel on the floor during an operation and using a clean scalpel after that, but the cost of, you know, the cost of medicine would drop dramatically. And I feel the current insurance industry is taking advantage of that because it's the old example of the $50 Pentagon hammer that I can go down to Sears and get for $9.99.
Yeah.
They're gouging people, and we should simply not allow it. we should use tort reform and ensure that the insurance companies are charging a rate that's reasonable and is in alignment with free market values and supply and demand. And if we just followed these simple rules, then California and every state would have
a great
healthcare
system.
Now,
talking to a few doctors, I mean, if it meant losing maybe 2% of their income or 5%, if they make enough money as a whole, where it's not that noticeable, although it definitely isn't the pleasant thing to have, but when doctors are being told that they're not allowed to treat certain patients, like someone getting cataract surgery when they're 72 years old, even though they lead a full-time job and they could run 3 miles a day, but the fact that they're 72 years old, they're supposed to just live with it and take some aspirin.
It's a direct violation of the Hippocratic Oath.
Right, and I see that
then.
being even more of a factor than it is the money.
Of course. Is that, I mean, what we just said, is that good or is that evil? Don't you
Absolutely.
Want that person to see?
Yeah.
That's why, you know, again, we get caught up in the day-to-day issues. That's why I said earlier in our conversation that don't get too caught up in the day-to-day issues, whether or not, you know, it's cool that Obama furnished his birth certificate, things like that. You know, the fact is if we followed the law of the land, you know, again, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence, we wouldn't have to have anybody furnish any birth certificates. We'd say, okay, you know, the definition of a natural-born citizen is as follows. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you do qualify or you don't qualify. Have a nice day. Now let's just keep going on with making America the most prosperous nation on the planet.
Right, and now he's making T-shirts to sell? That says he furnished his birth certificate. I mean, what about making T-shirts that said I brought all the troops home?
Yeah, right. So he said
nobody
that.
Wants those
Somebody
shirts.
Said that,
I guess.
By the way, because I mean, we said there'd never be another Vietnam. Now we got three.
Soon to be
That's
four.
Right.
NATO right now is getting ready to bomb Pakistan, and it's expected that we're going to bring troops into Pakistan.
Great. So now here we go. We're turning into the modern-day version of Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan, and Napoleon. Next thing we know, we're going to be attacking Russia in the middle of winter, just like Nazi, you know, like Hitler and Napoleon. We're expanding an empire instead of doing what, you know, the founding fathers said to do. We will declare a constitutional war only if there was an imminent threat against the United States of America. What are they doing over there? They got 100 AK-47s and sticks and rocks in Afghanistan? Osama bin Laden was in Pakistan the whole time in some luxury mansion.
Allegedly.
They knew where he was. Why are we allowing American lives to die? Now, first of all, all of them are unconstitutional. They were not. There was no resolution passed through Congress. So I'm totally against it to begin with. But if you're going to go to war, my stance on war is very simple. Annihilate the enemy as quickly as possible so you save American lives, attain ultimate victory, and bring our boys back home. Save American lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What are we doing over there? The man, why do we even pay attention to what these people say? It's organized crime. It is the American, the American royalty. It's the mafia. We just got the Gambinos and, you know, Al Capone in there. You name it. Why do you pay attention to them? If somebody lies to you, like, for example, thank God I don't lie to you all the time, but let's give Obama a shot here. If he lies, and it's a guaranteed fact that he lies 75% of the time or greater, if it was me and you knew I lied 75% of the time or greater, would you pay attention to a word I said? Or would you just jump to the conclusion that Mike's lying again?
Well, I mean, he said he was going to be the most transparent president ever, and I think he's right, because whatever he says, just take the opposite, and, hey, it's like Bizarro World. Just take the opposite, and
that's
the truth.
One. Yeah, as soon as he says that himself on C-SPAN, you know, I'll have a little party over here. But, yeah, I mean, every promise that he made, he's you know, blown out of the water. He's not doing the thing he said, and we need accountability. You can't trust anybody. The constitutional oath is not enough anymore. We need a legal contract and 5 to 10 people of every office of high power. We need 5 to 10 people watching them on a day-to-day basis. And as soon as they violate, their oath, that we give them a little slap on the wrist in private. The second time, we drag them through the streets by their hair, put them in the media, and make sure that everybody knows that we realize, hey, you know what? We just reviewed the Constitution. Guess what? You're public servants. You work for us. We're the boss, and you are fired.
Hey, I'm all in favor of stoning.
Why not?
And Michael, I have a question.
I mean, it's you're going to hear me say this on a variety of different shows. I might as well include it on your own. If it was 1776, don't you realize that if these people are around, that the founding fathers and the American Revolutionary Army would only be looking for two things: enough ropes and enough trees.
Well, we didn't have baseball bats back then, but I think Louisville Slugger would definitely.
I got a 33 right here. I got my 33. It's right here by my door. I was an all-star catcher. I still use it.
Hey, Michael, I have a question. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question for you real quick. Do you think this is all by design?
Definitely. Every time somebody makes it, it's almost like you read my blog here. Maybe you did. It says in there that at any time the political institution, any time a Democrat or a Republican that is considered to be one of the insiders, right? That's why I said we need an outsider. Reagan was considered an outsider. That's why he was universally loved by America, and he was considered the great communicator because he's like, hey, he's one of us, you know? Mm-hmm. But as soon as you see a candidate that's an insider make a move, it's like somebody who plays chess. And before they make that first move, the entire match has been played out. And they think out what they'll do if their opponent makes a move against them. And I believe that this person here, a lot of people, you know, I hear it all the time. Man, that Obama, he is an idiot. He is so dumb, right? No, he's not. He is not an idiot. He's not dumb. He knows exactly what he's doing. The people that are funding him know exactly what they want him to do. And the people that he tells what to do are in lockstep. I always say, never pay attention to what a politician says, including me. Pay attention to what a politician does. Go on out to the U.S. House of Representatives website, go on out to the United States Senate website, check out the voting record, and you'll see that a lot of Republicans vote like Democrats. Look at John McCain, who Sarah Palin endorsed as being such a conservative hero. And you'll see that most of the time, 50-50, he's voting like a liberal, for instance. This isn't a discussion about whether somebody's a rhino and all that other stuff. I'm not really concerned with that. I am concerned with your question and giving you a deliberate answer to it. Everything is done by design. And if you've got a Marxist in office, let's just have a little survey. Do you think Obama's a Marxist? I'll go first. Definitely. What do you think?
All signs point to yes.
Yeah.
Young lady, is he a Marxist?
Yeah, I would say yes.
Okay, we've got a consensus. It's FDR all over again. There was a long stream. The thing is it's not even original. Obama isn't even original. He's just taken a page out of FDR and LBJ's book, I Know My History, and there was a revolving door of socialists and communists going in and outside of FDR's office and LBJ's office. FDR called Joe Stalin Uncle Joe. He was envious of Joe Stalin. He was like, yeah, man, you know, that socialism and that fascism over there with Mussolini and Hitler, man, they got something going on. I like that.
Yes, and
we all remember him.
FDR said Mussolini was one of his biggest. He admired Mussolini quite a bit.
That's what I said. That's what I said. We all remember him for the only thing to have to fear is fear itself. We don't remember him for saying this quote: "Let's get the American public hooked on federal government assistance like a narcotic, like heroin." They don't teach that in school.
Oh, of
course
not.
This is liberal indoctrination at its finest.
Yeah.
So
to answer your question,
maybe you might have studied this a little bit more than me, but let me ask you, why didn't FDR go the extra mile like Stalin and Mussolini and Hitler did? Why is it that we had socialism light at that time? I've always been curious on that.
Well, next thing that happened, World War II broke out. then FDR, instead of saying, I'm going to make America my America, he had the capability, the egotistical and arrogant bastard that he was, to say, I've got the opportunity right now, if I play this right, to make this my world. This is exactly what the trap that everyone falls into. Napoleon, Hitler, Stalin, Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan.
Mm-hmm.
Look through history. They all made the same mistake. They decided that the only thing that would be acceptable is the world. And then they proceeded to spend all of their money. They spread themselves too thin. And while Alexander the Great was in Persia trying to conquer the unconquerable, because he was trying to change an ideologically sound Muslim world into a Christian world, right? We've got the Crusades going on here.
Yeah.
It never works. Leave them alone. How about making America a better place? Wouldn't you guys agree that we've got enough problems over here?
Why are we treating people in Haiti? If we made this such a great place again, Michael, that people would be envious and they would consider dropping some of their teachings to get in on what we're doing.
Exactly.
We could lead by example.
That was Reagan's stance. Didn't he refer to America as the shining light on the hill, the beacon of freedom and liberty? That's what the entire world is pissed off about Obama. Talk to people that were in former socialist and communist countries that came here to America, and they're saying, do you realize that I sacrificed my life just to get my family here so that they could grow up in America and have freedom and liberty and the capability to do what they wanted and to achieve the American dream? The American experiment is very simple, but to know that women and men could govern themselves. We don't need what I see right now, which is Obama coming off Air Force One, doing a fake salute to some military people that he hates, right, and wanting to become a dictator. He's a Marxist, and everything is planned. What's going on right now is by design, and his objective, in my opinion, is to inflict as much pain and suffering as possible on the American public through monetary slavery and convince people on the street that capitalism is evil so that we can flip over to socialism.
Well, yeah, but with socialism, then they can get that North American Union, which was the goal the whole time, and of course bring in that one world currency, because if people like George Soros say that the United States needs to double its debt, and at that point we will have a brand new one world currency. So,
exactly.
So
why
is it that Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi just don't care? They just see this as, okay. What do you mean?
Because they're foreseeing the future. They're American royalty right now. But just like the former Prime Minister of Great Britain, whose name escapes me right now, Tony Blair, he's trying. You see how he's not trying to become Prime Minister of Great Britain anymore. He wants to be head of the IMF. He wants to be head of these globalist concerns.
Well, Gordon Brown's applying for the same jobs.
Exactly. And that's why when people call these people idiots, it's very simple to say, man, that guy's such an idiot. I hate that guy. He's so stupid. They're not idiots. They're more stupid. They're very intelligent people who have a plan in place, a very well-tooled, crafted plan, and they're playing it like Kasparov and Fischer. Move the pawn. Move the knight. Move the bishop. Move
the
king.
I'm going to say Tim Geithner is one of the greatest people that they can have here, because everybody just assumes he's like the biggest dummy in the field.
Yeah. They're all figureheads to a certain degree, but I'm just going to use the current comedy phrase here. What we have right now in the United States government sucks.
Yeah, I guess
again,
you could say that.
We got a revolving door here. Paulson came in. The year he came in, he saved $15 million in taxes because Bush Sr., right, gave him a little break, created a special tax break just for him to take on the role of Secretary of the Treasury. Saved him $15 million. It was the biggest profitable year that he ever had. leaving Goldman Sachs and becoming Secretary of the Treasury. You need to play a game of follow the money here, because that's what these people are motivated by: money, control, power, and greed. If we take that away with term limits, for instance, and this is what I said on a radio show last night. Why isn't it? Why can't we just say that basically senators are like colonels or generals in the army, and give them the same salary as colonels or generals in the army? If I was to take over a corporation, but when I'm running here, one of the things that distinguishes me from Dianne Feinstein, my opponent, or any of the Republican opponents, is I refuse to take $1 of American money for my salary. I will work for free. Because if I was to take over the CEO job of a corporation that was going under, because I believe America is going bankrupt, I would do what Lee Iacocca did. I would take $1 salary until it went profitable. Name another politician in America that's doing that.
No, you're probably right. I don't think anybody's offered that.
I'm doing it right now.
You know, one guy offered to sleep in his office. I mean, I guess that's
yes.
a start.
Yes, it was Chavez. Yeah, it was a congressman from Utah. His name escapes me right now. I think it's Justin Chavez. Yeah.
That sounds
I'll
around
do that
right.
Too.
I could be wrong.
We're public servants. Servants, not public masters.
Yeah.
This is what
well,
you
Heidi,
have
do you have any other questions? Because we're up against 10 after here, and I don't know how long Michael has, but I know he's hitting
I'll
a dollar
as long as you'd like.
I was earlier in your website, and is it true that you wanted to bring prayer back into schools?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Why? And first of all, I mean, I'm a man of faith, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that at any moment, at any time, at any given day, that if some person wants to pray, whether they're in school or not, that they should be allowed to do that. But I also believe in evil opportunity here. I mean, if they've got little mosques and if Jewish people have the capability to go into their temple or pray in their own way, then I think that Christians should too, or take it all away. But
yeah.
I believe that we're one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And if that's changed, then the foundation of this nation has changed, and we're in deep trouble. That's true.
Yeah. Well, they want to take God out of schools. I think that's very... I like that you want to keep God in school.
Well, I mean, it goes back to your other question. I'm surprised they didn't bring it before. Is this planned? You need to take a look at another document at my website. It is if you'd like, don't consider it an order. I'm just saying, you know, that it might be good for you to review it. It's a very popular document. It was introduced in 1963 in the United States Congress, and it was the 45 stated goals of the Communist Party of the United States. And you'd be very surprised if you went down that list how many things you could check off that they've actually accomplished right now. One of them is, of course, taking the family, Christianity, religion, community, etc. Invade the unions. Invade the educational system. Get in close contact with the media right up the street here, in fact, in Burbank, 10 to 15 minutes away from me. Make sure that the propaganda machine is cranked up. Let's educate America as to why capitalism is horrible and socialism and communism is a good way to go. Like Nikita Khrushchev said, let's just give them small doses of socialism, invade their government, their unions, and we'll just get them used to socialism, and before you know it, they'll wake up and they'll all be communists. If you don't believe me, then you didn't see many of Michael Moore's movies.
Yeah, I've seen a few of his movies. I know where you're going with that.
Yep.
But speaking of which, though, how is it that you're going to get the Hollywood crowd to rally behind you, Michael?
That's a great question. I'll be the first one to tell you that I consider myself to be Don Quixote going after the windmill. But I'll be damned if I let somebody waltz in the door. And I think that America is craving for somebody like myself to answer your questions like I'm answering right now, that I come across as an average person, somebody on the street, that I'm not a career politician. I know you guys like Ron Paul, obviously. But the one statement that stands with me out of the first presidential debate was when Herman Cain basically said, no, I'm not a career politician. Thank God. You don't want career politicians in there. You want average, everyday people. And if you want people to revive the American economy, why don't you put small business owners and entrepreneurs in these positions?
Hey, speaking of which, so I was wanting to ask you about an hour ago, Michael. I know you said you're a small business owner. What type of business do you run?
A high-tech company. I specialize in enterprise management, IT security vulnerability, website design, and search engine optimization. My clients include Walt Disney, eBay, Honeywell.
Okay.
Big, big, you know, concerns. and it's done exceptionally well. I'm blessed.
So let me ask you then, what do you think about this whole internet kill switch slash giving Barry Satoru the ability to shut down a website on a whim?
I wrote an article about it. You know, I'll tell you what it says there is that I believe it is dictatorial power. I believe that, you know, Chairman Mao would have loved to have had that power. And I believe that that's what China's doing right now. I believe that's what Iran is doing right now. And slowly but surely, with each passing day, I see the presidency evolving into a dictatorship. And I really can't blame it all on Obama. I saw a piece of this, for good reasons and bad reasons, occur during the Bush-Cheney years. The Patriot Acts, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it slowly but surely coming. As soon as Katrina happened, FEMA came in, and they disarmed people. I couldn't help but think of, you know, my favorite pal there, Joe Stalin, you know, Mr. Hitler.
Well, that's
first
like even just recently with
people.
The Fukushima bombing, the first thing, not bombing, but the nuclear bomb, the nuclear explosion, let me clarify here, and the first thing the Japanese government does is to do their best to shut up all the journalists. It's like, no, you have a nuclear reactor to fix. The first order of business shouldn't be, let's find all the journalists and try and put them in jail so that they don't talk about it.
Yeah, but that's called censorship, right, sir?
Right.
Okay, no more freedom of the press? Exactly. How about actually defining the problem? You had a huge disaster. You had 1970s reactors that you're idiots and you didn't upgrade, right? I think the French have better nuclear reactors than Japan does. You made that mistake, but hey, what can you do? 9.0 hit. Nobody prepares for a 9.0, right? Even here in Southern California. But it did. Don't you think it would have took 5 minutes for maybe five smart people in Tokyo to get together and say, yeah, you know, what they did in Chernobyl was they didn't take any chances and they just dumped a whole bunch of concrete on it. Let's do that. Instead, because that corporation up there has so much influence, because they bought off all the politicians in Tokyo, they basically tried to save the thing. But if there was no corruption, then there would have just been a bunch of concrete being poured over all sides. It wouldn't have gone on for but a week. A lot of people wouldn't have died.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people would have respected the Japanese government. I personally, after this, I have no respect for the Japanese government because it's their job, just like it's Barry's job, to do what's best for America and its people. It's their job to do what's best for Japan and the Japanese people. And these people sat back and watched them die, not caring. Implement a plan. Come up with a solution and implement a plan. Reagan referred to it as blue ribbon panels. I don't know how to solve this problem, he said. So go find the experts, and you drag them here to Washington, D.C. We're fixing this problem, and we're not waiting until later. We're doing it right now, because this country is in deep, deep doo-doo. And so we're fixing it.
Well, let me bring
up
one other
for three, 4 weeks.
And, in regards to our own here with the BP oil spill, and I guess with Japan, we have the same issue here where you have people like Anderson Cooper going live on the scene, and he's told by BP that if he goes any closer, that he could be arrested. I didn't know
I
that BP
that.
Was their own country.
I remember that. Here's Bobby Jindal down there, you know, a shovel, digging the stuff up, right? I don't know if he did that for political reasons or not. I think he's a pretty good guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, what you just talked about, how many times do news stories like that have to come up, which to me are obvious examples of an attack on the basic principles afforded to us by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights before the American people, you, me, and your co-host, basically say, we've had enough. Because I think that pain threshold is happening, as an old psychiatrist. I think it's coming. Where we basically say, no, Indiana, you can't allow your police officers to put on a bunch of black masks and come in like it's Checkpoint Charlie. It's
I can't believe we're even discussing this. This should be a non-issue.
Exactly.
Well,
so I'm continuing
then,
to answer
you
the young lady's question.
You yourself as a Republican, Michael, so basically I want to make sure that if we vote for you that we're not getting another Bush. So how do you differentiate yourself from what Bush had for 8 years?
Because I've got ethics, morals, and values. I get to use my favorite punchline. Thank you. But I'm actually going to do what's best for the country. I represent the people in this state, you know? And I know what the state wants. I know it's necessary for California to prosper, and I'm going to implement those plans. I'm not going to do anything that's going to be the opposite of that. We can't spend money that we don't have. The first
Absolutely. Things first.
Stop spending money, man. What do I mean? They say that they get it. You know, how many times have you heard Obama say "I get it," or any American politicians say that they get it? None of them get it. They all basically say, "Yeah, I get it." And in the back of their minds is, yeah, I hope they shut up soon so I can just go back to my mansion. Right? They don't get nothing. They get a lot of money, a lot of money to be given, and a lot of
warming.
Power. Say it again?
What about carbon taxes and global warming?
Exactly. Did you notice that carbon exchange was put in Barry's backyard? Just a little coincidence.
No, I didn't. Oh, yes, you're right.
Yeah, exactly. What do you want? You want Chicago politics in Washington, D.C.? What's Chicago known for? Corruption. Washington, D.C. was bad enough as it was. It was a den of iniquity. And then you brought in Chicago politics.
Yes.
You throw Obama in there along with Rahm Emanuel, you might as well put Al Capone in there with, you know, machine gun, whatever his name was. You know? There's a 1-2 punch for you.
And let me throw this out here too, Michael, because I didn't ask you this one yet. Tell us your beliefs on the Second Amendment.
Oh, my geez. Well, I would like you to take a look, if you haven't already, what I'd like you to do. You'll love this. Well, first of all, like I said, I grew up on a chicken farm. It was my job to get rid of rabbits and rats and things like that, so I grew up with a .22 pistol, a .22 rifle for the rats, a .410 shotgun, and a .440 double barrel. Okay? And so I came to California, and things were very different. And so what I've done is I started a documentary about what it takes for a California person like me, who's literally a Boy Scout, okay, to go get a concealed carry weapon permit. It's literally documented on my Facebook wall. I'm on part 6 of it so far. And I'm looking at my Glock 33, 357 SIG here right now. I'm a member of every pro-Second Amendment group that you know of, okay? Mm-hmm. And what I'm doing is I'm showing how hard it is and how you're getting the runaround to simply want to protect your family. Because I'll be completely honest with you and your listeners and your co-host by saying that because of my stance on illegal immigration within the state of California, I and my family have received a certain amount of threats. And they are serious threats. And I want to protect my family. I'm kind of silly like that. And so I went to the wonderful, it's going to be a shameless plug, right? I went to Burbank Gun World. And after talking to one of my Marine friends, I said, I want you to tell me what the best concealed weapon is that has the most impact and the most stopping power. He said, you got to get the Glock 33 357 SIG, 125 grain hollow point. Jealous. Fine. So I went through the process, the 10-day wait. Let's just say that I'm as behind the gun rights as, you know, anybody in this entire country. You know, I'm the gun rights poster child. I'm the out of my cold dead hands guy. And when I went to Gun
right.
World, they talked to me about it, and they're like, well, hey, Mike, you know, we hear you're running for Senate. You got our vote. I'm glad to hear that, guys. That's great. hey, what's your stance on open carry? And I said, well, my stance on open carry, guys, is the Second Amendment. And that's the end of my stance. Do you like it?
Hey, I like it.
Yeah.
All right. That's the end of my stance. I'm not
right,
going to go into paragraphs about it.
It's hard to get a concealed permit when I'm walking around with a Mossberg 300A.
Uh-oh. Talking
yeah,
to a dangerous man.
And,
yeah, that's why I got that gun. It's no toy, let me tell you.
Right.
But I love it. I'm trying to, in fact, I'm going to be going to the, I'm going to go to the target range here in the local area. It's in Van Nuys, California. And the reason why is I want to recertify as an expert marksman in the pistol and the rifle. And I'm also quite the compound bow shooter. I was competitive in upstate New York.
Okay. Hey, I'm sold
I'm
on
all
that.
All for it. All for it.
I'm just hoping that you're not one of those that rides around in a Prius there in California with the windows not tinted, so everybody can see how green you are.
You're forcing me to send you pictures of my red Z06 Corvette. I'm going to have to do that after the show.
Hey, I roll around in a Dodge Durango, so, hey,
no,
both of
no.
us like to use our gas.
Hummer, you know, it's Hummer, you know? I mean, anything but that, I don't think I'd have to buy it. I
well, one of the
that.
Things I'm worried about, too, right now is I know that China has a big stake in putting up a high-speed rail system across the U.S., and Europe is going towards a car ban over the next 15 years, and I'm worried that the United States is going to go complete Agenda 21. I know California passed it, and I guess they're going to start phasing out air conditioners because that gives off too much carbon. And I like what they said with this was that Saturn's rings are being lost because too many people in Southern California are using their air conditioners.
This is going to sound, you know, probably pretty bad to your audience, but I don't give a damn about, you know, Saturn's rings. Who cares? You know, I mean, maybe it's because, you know, I'm just a regular average guy and a tech. I pay more attention to my computer and, I rarely get, you know, go off to the astronomy institutes and take a look and basically say, oh, my God, Saturn's rings have eroded by 0.0001%. This is blasphemy. It's an act against God. You know, maybe that's why, you know, I don't have a problem with it. But, you know, the reality is that the Earth, if you actually research this, first of all, you should research how much money people like President Obama and Al Gore will make because of their ties with the carbon exchange and all these companies that were already positioned previous to the release of the movie An Inconvenient Lie. Okay? You should understand that these guys, before that movie, he was worth $10 million, and after that movie, he's worth $100 million, Al Gore.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay? These are facts. This is not speculation. The world goes through certain sequences. Like right now, we're seeing, you know, more storms. You know, we're seeing tornadoes in the southeast. It's too bad. I know people down there, and I've talked to them on the phone. And, you know, we have more hurricanes and more earthquakes and things like that. But if you look back into the geological history of time, you'll find that we go through, it's basically like a sine wave, if you're familiar, that the temperature rises and falls a certain degree. And certainly throwing a bunch of black smoke up into the air isn't helping things. But anybody that comes to the conclusion that because we decided to, you know, make Pittsburgh into the steel town, that is responsible for a bunch of polar bears going underwater and drowning, right, is a bunch of malarkey, right? Because these liberals, remember I told you that they're insane, you know, liberal equals
well,
insane.
Well, one of them in
they're
Georgia
synonymous.
Said that Guam's about to capsize.
Guam.
Yeah, because there's too many people on it, so the whole island's going to tip over.
Yeah. You want to have a little gentleman's bet on that? I mean, I'll put up like $100.
Yeah, I have
you know,
some beachfront property in
part.
Kansas, too, that I'm willing to sell.
Yeah, we could go back to the Florida Everglades model. I think that's next. You know, that's going to capsize. Because
right,
there's
so,
too many people walking there.
If there's any other issues, I could stump you on here, and I guess I'm not going
go
as deep and heavy as I should be. I try to be a little bit nicer when it's the first time I have somebody on because I
yeah,
want
well,
you to
be
come
nice.
Back.
feel free not to be nice. That's fine, too. I mean,
but,
I'm a nice guy.
One of my main concerns, though, I mean, you answer it with the Second Amendment, and you also answered, as far as Agenda 21 goes, I don't know how familiar you are personally with Agenda 21, but I want to know how you could repeal that in California.
Well, I have friends in Colorado, Mara and Jack Roberts, who have thankfully educated me about Agenda 21.
Okay.
I believe it is part of, you know, the United Nations and one world government type scenario. It simply needs to be identified as a direct attack upon the sovereignty of the United States of America, and any direct attack upon the sovereignty of the United States of America should be construed as a war. And
right.
As I said to a good friend of mine in New Jersey, it gives us this wonderful opportunity to turn the United Nations into a bunch of condo units, my friend.
Right, I can see that.
Sell them.
I mean, I don't want the whole United States to look like little Brooklyns.
Right. Exactly. I saw it in Europe when I was there for a year and a half. And I saw, because of the European Union's open borders idea, I saw their entire culture, the entire cultures of certain countries destroyed. And I will be damned if I allow that to happen to the United States.
Well, I know that in England, the number one baby name in 2010 was Mohammed. I know that's a very British name.
Right. Yeah. Kind of odd. You think it would be something like Charles, you know?
There's a lot of
Not
Ians
Mohammed.
Out there. I would expect Ian to continue.
Yeah, Ian. I'd go for Ian. Yeah, that's a very, very, very English name. Mohammed, no, I don't see that in the top 10. So the problem is that we have to understand that there is a peaceful invasion here. You can view it as you want. I think the Second Crusades is underway. And I applaud the fact that in Europe there's been several countries that have said, hey, no minarets. Right? It's this Ground Zero mosque thing. I was joking, but not really joking. I said, okay, I'll be okay with the Ground Zero mosque as soon as we're okay with putting pictures of World War II generals of the Japanese at Pearl Harbor. It's the same thing. You're desecrating what I consider to be a sacred place and a battleground. It's like Gettysburg. It's our Pearl Harbor. And if you allow them to do that...
San Diego, I don't think you'd mind taking a caller, do you?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
No way.
Hey, I have to ask you. I mean, you are my guest here, and you might say no.
Yes, there's always yes.
There's out there about callers, so I have to ask you.
More people, more better.
Okay. On that note, let's go to Ron in San Diego. Go ahead, Ron.
Hey, Ron.
Hey, I really haven't followed. What's this gentleman's name?
Michael Stolaire, sir.
I was just kind of... Listen, I don't know if you running for office or something.
I'm running for United States Senate against Dianne Feinstein in California.
Oh, okay. I'm in California. Now, I tell you the truth. I vote. I've been voting since I was 18, but most of the time I'm just getting off work and I'm making it to the polls in time. So I really don't study the candidates, but late the last 14 years, I voted Libertarian on everything. And so I don't really get much of a chance to actually, you know, get out and be politically active. So I'm always looking for ways to cut my costs and pay my bills. But what's this nonsense about banning air conditioners?
What's part of the Agenda 21?
Carbon.
I've heard of that. Is that the carbon footprint thing?
Yes.
Carbon.
Yeah.
But Michael can go into it better than I can. He lives there.
Yeah,
well,
carbon emissions. Anything causing carbon emissions. You know, it's that, you know, I'm going to sound like Glenn Beck here for a second, but, you know, under my institute of the cap and trade, energy prices are going to necessarily skyrocket. Isn't that great?
Well, you know what? I'm 52 years old, and for the first time I own my own home, and I actually got my own air conditioner, and I enjoy running it once in a while. But... you know, I always think about what the utility company's going to charge me. But I hate
exactly.
putting, you know, I've just now gotten to where I have my own air conditioner all these years, you know. And
How do you feel about the United States government going World War II on you and basically saying that you know, we'll allow you to have an air conditioner. We're going to be nice and allow you to have an air conditioner, but you can only, you know, we're going to ration that out, and you can only run it 1 hour a day. How do you feel about that?
Well, it sounds
no
like
what,
it sounds like to me that, yeah, that's I'll have to do it like when I used to sell marijuana. I'll have to go under the cover of darkness to run my air conditioner.
Yeah. Or, and I appreciate how you vote, and I'm going to ask the people on the phone here who I know are Ron Paul supporters, does Ron Paul run as a libertarian?
Well, he's actually switched to a Republican the last hour.
And why did he do that, sir?
I think that was to get more votes.
To maximize the chances of being elected. You're talking to somebody who's exactly the same way. I'm more of a libertarian than I am a Republican. But I want to be elected, because if I don't get elected, then I can't do anything.
Well, yeah,
if you don't win, you can't do anything.
Yeah, that's true. I'm kind of debating whether or not I should re-register as a Republican. But
well, that's the whole point. I'm not here to be the Republican recruiter, and I respect the fact that you're a libertarian and you registered as a libertarian. And you're an American, and so you vote any way you'd like to vote. But
do you see
the Democrat Party coming up with a socialist party or a communist party to split their vote?
No, but like I say, you know, I've been in both of them, and I've been voting libertarian just as a protest vote, you know.
Okay, and what occurs is the Libertarian Party is basically a faction of the right wing. And it takes votes away from the Republican or the Libertarian, whoever's in the lead, right? And what we have to do is, I said earlier in this conversation, maybe you didn't hear me, is we need to put our differences behind us, and the future and prosperity of America and future generations of Americans in front of us. We have to do what's right for our children and grandchildren, or else there won't be an America left. And so I'd ask you to seriously consider what I just said.
Yeah, well, you know, that when that time comes, I'll make up my mind. But, yeah,
exactly.
I mean, I understand, yeah. I mean, I've always
vote for the right person. That may be me, it may be somebody else. But if we don't stop, you have to understand that I view this in a militaristic fashion. I view Obama and his pawns, you know, his knights, his bishops, his queens, like Feinstein, like Boxer, like Waters. You know the people I'm talking about because you're from California. Right?
Yeah, I believe Feinstein is a trilateralist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Don't you want her to go away? I do.
Yeah, well,
I want to
retire her. Yeah, I'd like to say, you know, that she's probably not in it now. Is she in office currently?
Yes, sir.
Well, she's
yeah,
not.
Yeah, she's running against Ron.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I'm running against her.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What I'm saying is that, you know, my feeling is once you're in the Trilateral Commission, it's like once a pickle, never a cucumber. And she's already been in there, so she's under the influence, even though she's not currently enrolled.
Okay.
Actually, who I think is even worse than all of them is Pete Stark.
Who is he?
The congressman up in Northern California that he's about as ultra-liberal as you could find. Nancy Pelosi is less liberal than him.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is true.
Well, on my list, I guess, so Dianne Feinstein on 2011, she was a member of the Trilateral Commission. But they're supposed to be a member if they're in office. So that's
right. That's because they're looking forward to the future, and I meant to say this earlier in this conversation. It's because all of these people could care less about the American people and America in general. All of our American corporations are now globalist corporations, like Nike is making shoes in Indonesia. They don't care about America. And they're already positioning themselves.
Apple is now the world's biggest company.
Yeah. They're now positioning themselves for where they're going to sit in the what seat they will be in a world government. And it's up to people like yourselves that are on the phone to decide whether or not you want an America left or you want a world government left. And all I'm saying to you is, I have nothing against libertarians. I'm more libertarian than I am Republican. but I run Republican because I want to enhance my chances of winning, just like Ron Paul does.
Yeah, I see your point.
Why run if you can't win?
Yeah, yeah.
Would you rather have Feinstein?
No. I mean, once they've been in the Trilateral Commission, my feeling is that even if they're in office and they're not a member, they still talk to them, their buddies, the Trilateral Commission anyway, you know. They've already been on the influence, yeah.
So just look back. I'm glad you called because it's a very important point, right? Look back in the election, and you'll find that the Republican vote will get 38%, and the Libertarian vote will get 10 or 15%, and the Democrat will get 40 to 50%. Guess what happens if you combine the Libertarian vote and the Republican vote? No more Feinstein.
What was your name again? Michael...
Michael Stolare.
Well, I'll put his website up in the chat room again for you, Ron.
Stolare, huh? Is that
S-T-O-L-L-A-R-I? It's S-T-O-L-L-A-I-R-E. Stolare.
Oh, Stolare.
Just look on the link in the chat room, Ron.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, okay.
Hey, we got a couple more callers. Ron, do you mind
really?
If I go along?
Hit it.
All right. I don't want to keep Michael too long, but as long as the phones are lit, I'll see as long as he can stay.
I'm here to talk. Let's go.
All right, you got it. All right, I'm going to go ahead and bring Goose on. Goose, go ahead, but we got one caller behind you, so I can't give you 10-minute interludes or anything like
that.
Yeah,
yeah. No, I just wanted to piggyback on what Mike was saying. You know, it's definitely beneficial for Ron Paul to run as a Republican as opposed to a Libertarian. And I think it's actually counterproductive for Libertarians to not only run as Libertarians, but try to strengthen the Libertarian Party. And I think it's counterproductive to not only Libertarians as a political philosophy, but it's counterproductive to fighting the left-right paradigm. Just because you're outside of the Democratic or Republican parties doesn't mean you're outside of the left-right paradigm. I think Libertarians probably fall more on the right side of the paradigm, but it's still a part of the party system, so you're not escaping from that. So I think it's definitely beneficial to be under one united front as opposed to having a bunch of different political factions and taking away from the votes of people that want to benefit you, that want to represent you well, such as Ron Paul. So I think it's a smart move for him to run as a Republican as opposed to a Libertarian, because not only is he ensuring that he has a chance to win, a fighting chance, but he's also appealing to mainstream Republicans who do themselves hardcore Republicans that will only vote for Republicans as opposed to a Democrat. So,
well, here's
another
faction to that, though, if you want to throw Ron Paul into this. Now, keep in mind that the Republican candidate, whether it's Ron Paul or whoever, will be decided before the Libertarian candidate will be. So if Ron Paul finishes second and he feels he has a strong chance to win, I'm sure he could just slide over there and pick up Jesse Ventura as his vice president, and he'll still have his name recognition out
now,
there. Can he win? I can't say that, but I mean, if he feels if this is his last chance, I mean, hey, it gives him an extra edge.
Now, here's the thing. I don't think Jesse Ventura has a fighting chance at being picked as a VP. When you look at the past debate with the Republican Party, you saw Gary Johnson come up as a close parallel of Ron Paul. So I definitely think Gary Johnson, I don't think he has a fighting chance at the presidential election or the primaries, but as a VP, I definitely foresee Ron Paul picking him as his VP if he does make it past the primaries, knock on wood. But we do see a lot of heavy hitters out there endorsing Gary Johnson. So, I wanted to get Mike's input on who might be another front runner for the BP slot for Ron Paul. My guess is Gary Johnson. Just because, I don't know if you're aware, but Will Nelson, who's a huge libertarian, endorsed Gary Johnson, so you know he's got a lot of backing there from the libertarian front. So I wanted to get your input, and if you seconded that, or if you think someone else is in the wrong. But
yeah,
honestly,
I seconded it.
Yeah,
is what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I second it with this caveat, is that if Ron Paul doesn't win the Republican nomination for president, then we're leading down that road, like you said. If we run Libertarian candidates, which I believe that they will, I believe that, if you would probably agree with me, that it would be taking away from votes from the right-hand side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
That's the big problem here. I could say, hey, it would be a good idea, because I'm looking at, you know, Fox News here in the background here on mute. Hey, maybe Greta Van Susteren should be, you know, vice president for the Libertarian Party. You know, it could be anybody. I happen to agree with you. I could say, hey, why don't we run the first father-son team in the history of the Libertarian Party, Ron and Rand Paul, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, unless you have a chance to win, unless you're electable, then why run in this case?
But I don't think Ron, a lot of people have pushed Rand as being a vice presidential candidate, but I don't know, it would almost seem like, what's the word, it would be...
circus-like?
No, it's on the tip of my tongue, but just like picking people that are close to you, you know, that you obviously have a weird affiliation with. I definitely think that, Johnson probably has a strong, he's more electable than Rand is, because Rand has a whole different set of issues that people are conflicted with. He's pro-choice, so obviously you would lose a lot of the pro-choice constituents if he did pick Rand Paul. So I think I can't tell you where Gary Johnson stands on the abortion issue, but that is another divisive issue, as we spoke about last night. So I think he would benefit from picking someone who's closely aligned with his smaller issues like that.
I totally agree with you on it. You got to go for the synergy.
Right.
The synergy of the two individuals is going to be greater in that scenario. But I'm going to take a step back and say again, although I totally respect what we're talking about here, if you take a look at the percentages of the last presidential campaign, and in most presidential campaigns, do you see a socialist party, do you see a communist party on there that's splitting the liberal vote? Of course not.
It's not nearly as strong.
Unless they really want to go hardcore into the green, which I'm not going to put it past them.
Now, do you foresee seeing... like a sort of Democratic answer to the Tea Party? The Republicans have the Tea Party, and the Democrats have what? The Green Party? The Coffee Party. But
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm not going to say the Republicans are the Tea Party.
They aren't.
I think it's been co-opted. I think originally it had more...
you're talking to somebody who's heavily involved in it. It's been 100% co-opted.
You had a bunch of rhino Republicans... come in like Palin, and they sort of...
Ann Coulter is not the Tea Party message.
Right.
No, that's the establishment message. Okay? Come on.
No.
You're listening to the Tea Party message. Allow me to introduce myself. Here I am, you know? The Tea Party itself, slowly but surely, the Republicans knew that with enough... You know, I mean, let's face it. If you put somebody on the take at the leadership level, right? Here, let me give you two words. Dick, Army.
Yep.
Okay? Do I really need to go into some dissertation about the co-opting of the Tea Party at that point? Or when J.D. Hayworth, a real conservative, was ahead or very close to John McCain in Arizona, and then Miss Palin came strolling down and decided to jump on there and say the biggest bunch of lies I've ever heard in my life to make sure that McCain won. Okay?
No, you're right on that.
It's the mafia.
Hmm.
It's organized crime.
I'm interested in finding out what the Democrats' next move is. And I know they're going to do something to shake it up. And I know, today, obviously, with the news, a lot of the Jewish base is probably disgruntled with the Democrats. So that was probably a poor move on Obama.
I was wondering, my friend, why did Jewish people vote for Democrats?
Yeah, really. You know,
What's going on?
I definitely think
he thinks he could make it up with the illegal vote.
No, and it's not the fact that Jewish people vote for Democrats, but when you look at the alliance between the Republican base and how many Zionists you have there, mm-hmm. especially with the Rhinos, you definitely completely alienated them. So if anything, he strengthened the Republican Party, strengthened the Republican Party because the Republicans have a history of being in bed with the Israelis.
Yeah,
so
let's make Israel 8 miles wide. How the heck do you protect that? Unless they're getting ready to use nukes.
Nope.
Yeah, it's like let's fit. Why don't we just go ahead and fit Israel in the city in basically the size of West Covina?
Yeah. They're supposed to be your ally. I mean, what we're doing is we're being fair weather friends to them. We're a Judeo-Christian nation. We went back to that before. I mean, isn't it, you know, in God we trust, one nation under God here, Judeo-Christian? They're our friends. All I'm asking the government is to have the guts to basically say, okay, you were cool during the Cold War, and, you know, we could put missiles there, and it made the Soviet Union afraid, but we don't need that anymore because we don't need to make the Soviet Union afraid anymore, so we're not your friends anymore. That's all I'm asking somebody
absolutely.
To say.
Yeah, and I think
that's
if anything, it strengthened Ron Paul's message of being non-interventionist and having that dubious tie to Israel. So I think you're going to see a lot of people from Obama's or Ron Paul's base agreeing with this policy. I definitely think if there was anything Obama did, this was a good thing.
Yeah.
Whether or not it was well-intended, I think it's, in the long run, a good decision in the right direction.
Well, I mean, Ron Paul's stance on this is an old stance, right?
Absolutely.
Commerce with all nations, alliance with none.
Right. Washington's farewell speech. I mean, that's
exactly.
What Ron Paul adheres to.
Washington and Jefferson said
mm-hmm.
this.
Yep.
Be friendly with everybody. Hey, you want to buy our stuff? No problem. Don't expect us to come over there and fight World War II for you because Adolf Hitler decided to bomb London.
Yeah. However, the way the media is spinning this is that we're taking sides with Palestine, and that's what I don't agree with because obviously, Obama wants to appeal to the Muslim base and, you know, get in bed with them. So obviously this is not well-intended, but I think if Ron Paul were to get in office, this would be a step in the right direction. And it's getting us in that non-interventionist stance that we should be in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're asking what the left's next move is. You don't have to worry about their next move. They're already moving. When those shots rang out in Arizona, Obama's run for president in 2012 began. I view him as a long-distance runner, and he's put on his joggers, and he's going down the road. I'm a long-distance runner from Syracuse University. You'll have to excuse the analogy.
Yeah, everything he does is campaign.
Yes. He's already cranking down the road. He's 1-2 miles down the road. He's got 26.2 to go. You know, he knows exactly what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
He's gaining momentum as we speak. And I put it this way, that, you know, the liberal army, if you want to consider, because politics really is war on a certain level. It's a war of ideas. And you have to understand that this gentleman is trying to raise $1 billion. I'd be, you know, not surprised if he could actually do it. And they have a plan. They have put their army through boot camp. They have trained them. They have equipped them. They have deployed them. And they have engaged the enemy. Would you disagree with this?
No, I can level with that.
They're firing
I...
shots and taking people down.
Yep.
What are we doing? We're at the front line and we're saying, hey, do we wear Nike sneakers or do we wear Reebok sneakers? Well, I don't know. We haven't even started the race.
I think we need to take off our sneakers. I think that's where we need
to
be.
Yeah, that's right. You took my punchline away from me. I remember right now one marathon. I don't know if it was the New York Marathon. I think it was Al-Azhar, you know, back when I was in long distance running. And he said, well, hell with the sneakers. I got to win the race, so I'm running it in my socks. And he did.
Have you seen those? I'm off on a tangent here, but have you ever worn those cool running shoes that fit around your toes?
No, I have not.
Just look.
I rely upon my. I'm looking at them now. I'm relying on my Nike Air Max cross trainers right here right now. I'm not a distance runner anymore because they do nasty things to your knees. I've got dual ACL injuries, we'll say.
Well, I'm interested in seeing what is going to happen with our foreign policy now that Israel is basically under siege with all these activists and Iran breathing down their neck. So this is, as you said, we're fair-weather friends, and now they're getting heated up over there. And if any, like, I think now stuff is going to finally go over the brink, you know, and they've been staying on the brink.
As soon as the boats went down the Suez Canal after Egypt fell, you knew something was going to happen.
Yep, and now, in their time of need, since they were dependent on the U.S., we ditched them. We ditched them. But which, you know, is unfortunate.
We're cowards.
It's unfortunate, given that we obligated ourselves to them. We said we will help you, but in their time of need, we weren't there. So I don't think this was timed correctly. I think it should have been done later and with a little more tact. But now, you know, when we call someone an ally, they are giving that their trust to us. So it was a complete betrayal. You know, have we done it later down the line? With someone else in office at a better time when things were a little cooled down, you know, I think...
You mean like 1989, my friend?
Yeah. I definitely
1989
think
would have been good.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think it would have been received quite well back in 89, but...
Exactly. The Cold War's over. We don't need you that in this position anymore. And then we had 20 years... to slowly but surely withdraw aid and make sure that they're all standing by themselves and
we
they don't
been
have
on
to worry
a,
about it anymore.
Could have exited on a good note, you know? We could
right.
have still been...
About the notes, Goose, I got one more caller behind you, like I was saying.
Oh, go ahead. Hey, I'm going to get off the air. I'm going to stay on the line if that's all right. I'm just going to listen. That's cool. I'll go ahead and mute myself.
No problem. Now,
you know my name?
My
feel free to Google
is,
me.
Absolutely.
What's that?
Yeah, I'll
I
go
said,
ahead.
The man knows my name. Feel free to Google me, and we'll have a long conversation outside of this radio interview.
Awesome.
And he's on Facebook, too.
That's what I mean. Find me on Facebook. There's Michael Stellaire. There's only one.
All right, take care, guys.
Hey, Hottie, can you bring up our next caller here? Because my switchboard is frozen. That's kind of why I let the Goose go on for so long.
Oh, they're not there anymore.
Oh, well, I can't even see it right now, so all right.
I have a question, Michael. Michael, I have a question. I have a question.
Go ahead.
My brother actually is, he's been asking this in the chat room. He says, Michael, what is your view on laying off public safety officers and teachers in California?
Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, they shouldn't be unionized. My stance on this is, you know, the same stance as Reagan's with the air traffic controllers. Okay, you either give them a chance, you know, you give them a choice as to be whether in a union or not, or understand that you remember what I said earlier in the conversation? The deficit we have in America is not the 14 to 15 trillion, it's a deficit of leadership, courage, honesty, and integrity. Why don't we just basically say, hey, it's your job to teach our children, you've got 24 hours to go back there, if you're not back there in 24 hours, you are fired.
Yeah.
End of story. And we'll hire people that are excellent. Why aren't we making it so that, you know, we're using the free market system instead of anything that has to do with a union, in my eyes, involves a fraction, it just insinuates some type of laziness into the equation. I hate to use this phrase, but the people that are in union labor, they feel that they're untouched, like they're in the mafia, like they're some sort of made men, you know? Tenured professors, for example, do next to nothing. And they're there to make sure that the future leaders of our country are excellent. And I feel that union labor in certain areas, it makes no sense, especially since it's been completely corrupted. It's been corrupted because you're sitting across the table from the guy that you elected, and you're basically saying, hey, Joe Smith, you remember when we elected you? So now we're going to, you know, we're going to negotiate our union labor welfare rate, you know. And on top of that, you know, we're going to make sure that you give us these pensions that make it very clear that within a certain period of time that California or any other state in the entire United States goes bankrupt because we can't afford pensions, okay? I want to steer away from the teacher thing for a second, right? But policemen in Orange County, for instance, if they're in there for, I believe, it's either 5 or 10 years, they get a pension for life, and it's 70 to 80% of their going wage. Now, they put themselves in harm's way on a daily basis. I understand that. Teachers do not, unless it's South Central down here in Los Angeles, okay? But the point is that we can't afford it. I should be sounding like Scott Walker right now, right? We can't afford it. We're sorry. We promised this stuff. It was a bunch of corrupt people that did that. We can't afford to do this, and I'm not going to allow the state to go bankrupt, so I'm sorry, okay? You're not going to get it. End of story. But Mike, no but Mike, I said no. What about no? Do you not understand? I'm not allowing the state to go bankrupt. There's your answer for your brother.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's see. Do we have any other callers? Goose, would you like to speak?
Well, I'm more or less preoccupied with trying to get my switchboard up here, and I apologize.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm looking in the switchboard.
All right. I'm just going to go ahead and reboot my switchboard here. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
No problem.
Goose, is there anything you would like to add?
Actually, yeah. I feel like I'd probably be able to answer this better on air rather than in the chat. It's a bit of a tedious discussion. But I think it was Rusty Shackelford. He was speaking on privatizing schools. Now,
exactly.
I don't necessarily agree with privatizing schools completely, because privatizing would imply a lot of things. Now, if you're – there are certain aspects that could be better, but I definitely think government schooling, or having the opportunity to have our children educated in a public school system, is a good thing. Now, if you're an anarchist, you know, or a libertarian, you know, a lot of people think that everything should be privatized. I don't necessarily think that it's going to be better than what the government provides. And it's not a question of quality. Like Mike was saying, he said, you know, why don't we hire, you know, quality teachers as opposed to get these bums that are just wanting a pension. Now, here's my issue. Of course, there's the issue of government indoctrination, but this is something that I think is worth compromising on as someone who subscribes to an essentially libertarian belief. I think it's a worthy compromise to say that a school ought to be a government service. Now, there are reforms that are needed. I'm not saying it's a perfect system. It's far from that. But I don't think it's an excuse to completely privatize our system. I do agree with the freedom to be able to send your child to a private school. That's awesome if you have the opportunity to do that. But I also think that there should be an option there. I think people should be allowed to send their children to public schools. Because a lot of people can't afford private sector education. It's so expensive. And, you know, but I think that in order to be a strong country, a productive country, we need to have a robust public schooling system. And I think it's hurting right now. We're obviously so far behind these other countries where children go to school, you know, more or less 365 a year, you know. They don't have the three-month summer breaks. So, you know, obviously there are problems with it, but I don't think it should be privatized because obviously there will be a lot of people who would just go uneducated. Now, yeah, I think there are some basic things that need to be taught, and a lot of these things aren't something you could squeeze in indoctrination into, you know. Now, when it comes to history.
I just don't believe in statism.
Yeah, absolutely.
I totally agree with you. I just don't want the centralized command of the Department of Education, which I think should be eradicated, to be pushing down some type of liberal agenda.
And what he's saying is robust and government schools do not belong in the same sentence. I agree. We don't have
robust public schools.
And
where do you live, sir? I'm sorry. You're in San Diego?
I'm pardon?
Where do you live? You're in San Diego?
I'm in D.C.
You're in D.C.? Okay, so, I mean, doesn't... Doesn't the local? I agree with you, by the way. I wouldn't privatize the school system, but I would leave it up to the schools in D.C. to decide what's best for the schools in D.C. instead of some centralized government entity that decides what's good
right,
for schools in D.C. in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, the Department of Education is completely incompetent. I definitely think that should go away. And I think that, like you said, different municipalities and local governments ought to have
right.
control of their school systems. That way you don't run the risk of government indoctrination and
right.
statism. You know, that way
Thomas
people
Jefferson
have some,
referred to as wards.
Yeah, some
wards.
Level. That way they retain some level of control over their child's curriculum. Now, when it comes to
exactly.
things like history, where there is an indoctrination thrown in there, whether it's on the part of the teacher or the government, I do agree with homeschooling a child on that. You know, if I were to have a child, I'd probably, you know, let them get all the basics out of the way that I'm not really, you know, fit to teach on, such as English, math, the sciences. You know, you can't really fit indoctrination into those subjects. But when it comes to history, I want to teach my children history. And then, you know,
mm-hmm.
from there, just pick and choose which classes to school them in. But when it comes
to
basic
to
subjects...
I'm here in a couple minutes
okay.
here, guys. I have to take 5 commercial breaks in 3 hours, and I got about 3 or 4 minutes before I have to take my next break.
Okay.
Sure.
But that's basically what I'm throwing out there. You know, I do agree that, our public school system is far from robust, but that's because it's our public school system. It shouldn't be all of our public schools. It should come down to your local government, not the
exactly.
federal government. So,
yep. I don't want to
yeah.
privatize the school system.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make sure that the D.C. school system is the D.C. school system and the LASD is the Los Angeles School Department. I want to make sure that the people that, because who knows what's best for Studio City besides the people of Studio City where I live.
Right.
Just like you know what's best for your area. And
mm-hmm.
I refuse to allow a statist Department of Education, which Joseph Stalin would like, to dictate what's best for the entire country.
Absolutely.
Why don't we save the $100 billion, my friend?
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Cut that.
Hey,
so.
Department of Education. It was, man... Thanks for being around since the Carter years. You're fired. Have a nice day. I'm going to put the $100 billion into the debt,
and here's your
I hope you enjoyed it. Goodbye.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we're on the same page there. The Department of Education, agriculture, they're basically lobbyist groups and unions. You know, I think we
okay.
ought to ditch them.
If they're lobbyists, then let them show up at the hotel like they were named after.
Yep.
Why do they have multi-billion-dollar entities within our own government? There's so many departments that have been generated throughout the years, and you know, for me, as a person of your ilk, I'm sure you'll enjoy what I have to say that I said earlier in this conversation. Maybe is that I think that we should, after the original Bill of Rights, do an audit of every piece of legislation that's been put through Congress and signed by the President of the United States, and certainly come up with one or several pieces of proof to prove that it's constitutional. And if not, we put it into the shredder.
I definitely think we need a constitutional convention, a real one, to come together.
It'd be dangerous for the current people, as long
yeah.
as we've got good leaders that would not twist that. I totally agree with you.
Right. Right, because a constitutional convention with the representatives we have in office now would be completely counterproductive.
Danger.
It would be
danger.
More of an unconstitutional convention, if anything.
Right, that's what I said. I totally agree with you, as long as I don't have Boehner there.
All
right. As long as I have the right people there, hey, I'm all for it, man. Go for it.
I'll show up to that meeting.
All right, well, Goose, I'm going to go ahead and mute the mic here. I'm going to give Michael basically just a minute or so to plug anything and everything he'd like to plug, Michael, and then we'll get with you and see if we can get you back towards the end of June, early July.
Yeah, sounds good. I just want to thank you for having me on the show. It's been an honor and a pleasure to speak with you this long, and you can read more about me and many other topics at michaelstolaire.com. You put the link in the show notes. I'm running against unfortunately, Dianne Feinstein in 2012 for U.S. Senate.
You have somebody to go against, so we need to retire.
Well, that's the whole point, is that if you want to get rid of one of Obama's generals, you have to view it like it's an idea, it's a war of ideas. Get rid of one of the generals. We missed the opportunity to get rid of Reed in Nevada. Don't miss this opportunity. Get rid of one of the liberal generals that has, you know, no other intention but to destroy the Republic of the United States of America. They want to destroy the sovereignty of America, and they're already thinking about their position in world government. Get rid of them. Remember, they are your public servants. They're acting like public masters. You are the boss. Fire them all in 2012.
Yeah.
Hey, I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, everybody, Michael Stolaire. Michael, thanks for giving us 2 hours of your night here.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure. Hope to be
all
back
right.
Soon.
You got it. We'll have you back.
You got it.
All right, guys. We're going
thanks
to grab
much.
A commercial timeout here, and when we come back, we're going to get into a lot of news. If anyone has anything they want to cover, the phone number is 347-324-3704. Back in just a few minutes.
Feeling the effects of all that GMO food? Has TV left you completely disconnected from the rest of man? Do you have any control over your life or that of your family? Want to know how to escape the matrix? Then join me, Nikki, and together we can rise above dehumanization. Only on Freedomizer Radio. And you can catch me Monday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central, that's noon Pacific time, and Saturdays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, and 1 p.m. on the West Coast. Hope to see you there, Freedomizers.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
I still meet people who believe that in tough times that Big Brother will save their skin. Really. The list of cities and states that are bankrupt is growing as I speak. Let's face it, you are the first line of defense in a crisis. Do you have an extra supply of storable food and water? The stores will be empty in a matter of hours in a crisis. Look, if you're willing to face reality, call Jan LeBaron at Healthy Harvest and she can help you get started no matter your budget. Healthy Harvest carries a full line of emergency preparedness and food storage products, including 300 different dehydrated and freeze-dried foods. She has vital information on water storage and purification, emergency evacuation kits and supplies. Jan LeBaron at Healthy Harvest is in the business of saving lives. Your life, your family's. Call Jan, toll-free 888-311-8940. 888-311-8940. Call now.
I am an autonomous government agent here to steal your livelihood.
Not so fast. I'm Sovereign Filing Solutions.
And I'm the Sovereign. We're teamed up.
To bring you...
the truth without censorship.
Are you tired of being fed multi-million-dollar media lies?
Are you ready for the real story?
Sovereign Filing Solutions has teamed up with the Sovereign newspaper to make sure you get it.
And not the BS this guy behind me wants to feed you.
Take the step, help make the change.
Oh, come on, that's not even fair. How are we supposed to rule indiscriminately if you know what's going on?
Hi folks, CT here. I want to talk to you about a great preparedness resource. TomorrowsHarvest.com. Whether it's an economic collapse or nature's fury, there's no feeling more secure than knowing that your loved ones will be well fed. If it's time to bug out or just camping with the family, Tomorrow's Harvest offers high quality, cost effective, and long term smart food storage. Get your free sample. The choices are great. From blueberry pancakes to cowboy chili, no one else has the meal variety of Tomorrow's Harvest. They also provide other survival necessities. Check out the various packages and customize your meal supplies. Remember, there's no reason for fear today when you prepared with Tomorrow's Harvest. Go to www.tomorrowsharvest.com and tell them you're a Freedomizer.
listeners, welcome back. We had to take that little extended break there just in case someone needed to go get some water or use the restroom or whatever. So thank you for sticking around with us here. Hadi, you're back?
Yes, I'm back.
All right. Now, I'll let you go ahead and go first here if you have any topics that you want to go over today, because I know this is your one day of the week. I'm here 4 days a week, so if you have anything, now's a good time to bring that up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have an article right here. And it's really good. The CDC warns Americans to prepare for a zombie apocalypse. It's from Deadline Live. It says, although it may seem unbelievable, this is not a satire piece or a joke. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control, which has been deeply engaged in frictions of swine flu and other so-called pandemics, is now publicly warning Americans to prepare for a zombie apocalypse. The article actually offers a useful aspect that includes emergency medicine supplies, food, water, and tools. Some strategies include preparing all your important documents, such as passport, birth certificate, medications. It goes on about defending yourself. They're going to, you know, are they going to loot us after they eat our brains? I mean, that's my question. You know, it brings a new meaning to identity theft, I guess. You know, with the rapture and zombies, let's have a looting party? I don't know.
What allegedly we're getting called up for the pre-tribulation rapture on Saturday?
I have no idea. I just think it's interesting.
Well, I know
6 o'clock
on the West Coast for us. That means we'll have Critic in at that point. And at 6 o'clock, if we know that we're here and Critic didn't make it, we wish him the best of luck. And you'll have to share us your secret on how you made it in.
Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. What do you think about the CDC warning us about this?
See, I did not even pay attention to this article. I'm not really worried about a zombie apocalypse at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've been saying this for years.
I'm like, hey, I'm not even going to waste my time on that.
Yeah.
Something we're not talking about, though, is Arkansas going through, what is this, their fourth day now of NLE 2011, the military exercises. They're conducting mock earthquake drills to prepare for the New Madrid fault line.
Yeah. Isn't this until the 22nd or the 20th?
I thought it was the 22nd.
Yeah. So if there's rapture, I guess some people will be saved if, you know, FEMA decides to do something.
Yeah, I'm sure they're not going to, but that's all right.
Yeah, I don't think so either. We don't know the day or the time. It's like a blink of an eye, I guess. That's what it says in the Bible. So.
Well, let me get into another article here. I'm going to go ahead and take over here just for a few minutes. Then we got one more break to take in about 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay.
But something I wanted to cover here was, I'm always interested in reading about DARPA, and unfortunately, I have not been able to find a good DARPA expert to come visit us on the show. Now, DARPA is basically a technology arm of how do I put this here? It's kind of like HAARP in a sense, but it's more on the ground related as opposed to sky related. And now they have a new behavior metrics technology allows the government to know what you're thinking. I did put the link in the room. I'll throw it in there a second time just in case anybody missed it. Big Brother doesn't just want to know where you are. He wants to know what you're thinking. Short of implanting a device in your brain that divulges your every thought, the government has opted for the next best thing, behavior metrics, a new omnipresent surveillance technology developed for the U.S. Air Force and destined to be used in law enforcement to monitor suspicious behavior. The system revolves around a camera that tracks facial movements biometrically in order to build a psychological profile of the individual under surveillance. Huntsville, Alabama's Photon X, Inc. recently received an Air Force contract to develop such a camera, reports Wired News. With one snap, the company claims its sensor can build a three-dimensional image of a person's face, the cornerstone of a distinctive biosignature that can be used to track that person anywhere. With a few frames more, the device can capture that face's unique facial muscle motions and turn those movements into a behavior metric profile that's even more accurate. This new technology is the next step up from DARPA's infamous gait analysis program, which will be able to identify terrorists by the way they walked. The program was widely savaged at the time as being an outrageous example of paranoia got mad. A video demonstration of the technology that features the Photon X website shows a number of different measurements changing when the subject alters his facial expression from a smile to a frown to an angry look. The motion of a subject's face is correlated to a uniform facial muscle model, and the motion of each muscle is quantified. Using this behavior metrics analysis system, it is possible to quantify simple data that describes the linear motion of all the facial muscles in real time, and then interpolate this data using a psychological profiling system. In plain language, the movements of all the muscles in your face will alert Big Brother through the process of behavior analysis to your presence as being a suspicious individual who may be engaging in an act of thought crime, or if you're planning a public protest. So they're going to be monitoring body posture movement, gaits, G-A-I-T, which is your walk, micro expressions, facial expressions. And
Wow. They're
going to allow the operators to track user activity in a covert manner. So I don't know about you, but I'm going to start playing the Humpty Dance around here just to remind people of how Humpty Hump used the fake nose and glasses. So if that's something that we have to wear. And then when the doo-doo chump punk points a finger in your face, tell him, step off, I'm doing the hump.
Yeah, you know, it kind of goes back to that article that I read about the cat ears, the ears, a couple weeks ago, how they track your every, you know, emotion. Yeah, that's pretty scary.
See, DARPA is one of those subjects that we really don't talk about much, whether it's here or whether it's a lot of other shows such as ours. But if it means every day having to walk slightly different, and I've been practicing over the last few months, I'll walk with a limp on one leg, and then 2 hours later I'll walk with a limp on the other leg just to change it up.
Yeah, just to throw them off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll try and hop for a little bit, put an extra bounce in my step. I mean, it sounds foolish, but at the same time, if they're going to monitor you from space and they'll know who you are because of how you don't even have to look at your face, they'll just see how you walk. And I've been studying that. I work in a certain office where I can watch out my window and I'll see some of the employees, and I won't see their face, but I know how they walk, so I can basically figure out who it is.
Yeah. I guess, you know, it you could. Yeah, because people walk the same way, usually. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's something you have to be vigilant about, and the average person won't know a thing about this.
Yeah. I guess it's time to take out the cane. I'm just kidding.
Sometimes, yeah, maybe on Tuesdays you take the cane out.
That's funny. Yeah.
Now, what about here in the Minnesota airport where the TSA conducts a bomb drill but doesn't tell the police?
Wow.
I don't know if you guys caught this one. This was on Natural News. And let me just go ahead and give you the... I was into something else here, and I had this up, and I figured, I'm already here. I don't want to click on the other one and have it sit for 2 minutes in case my computer freezes. But with their guns drawn and packing live ammo, police officers in Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport surrounded a man smuggling a bomb in a carry-on bag. And although details are sketchy because TSA is trying to downplay this, the cops were in no doubt yelling at the man to hit the floor and surrender. Had this man acted in any sort of threatening-looking way, cops would have definitely opened fire on him. This all took place at a TSA checkpoint at the airport. The whole thing was a TSA drill, with the only problem being that nobody told the cops. So I don't know how this works exactly. I guess because there's no threat really on the airports. TSA grabs an average of, what was it, out of 23 places, an undercover guy went through and he was able to bring his stuff through 20 times out of 23. But out of 23 times, they'll catch your water bottle at least 22 of those times, and most likely 23 times. So they're mainly looking for water bottles and shampoo, but if you have a gun in your bag, more than likely they're not going to catch it.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, go ahead.
That's ridiculous. I mean...
Right, but they don't even bother to tell the police that they're going to conduct an exercise, so therefore they look like fools when the cop comes in and wants to arrest somebody, and it's, oh, well, no, they're part of us.
Yeah, I think they should be arrested anyway.
They should be arrested anyway because he just groped somebody, but that's besides the point.
Yeah, that's true, too. Oh, my goodness, what is this world coming to?
Well, I'm very curious to see what happens in Texas when the TSA goes to court to keep the fondling and groping open. Right, yeah. Ron in San Diego says they catch a lot of people with misdemeanor drugs. And, yeah, that's just the same as when they have the checkpoints in town. When you're driving, and they'll say, I once saw on a car checkpoint where they have all these cops lined up to check the, and they'll tell you in advance what they're checking for. I saw a horn checkpoint once. They were checking to make sure that your horn worked.
Wow.
Now, I don't even know what the fine is for having a horn that doesn't work. But I remember hearing on the news that they rounded up like 30 people that were driving at a 0.09 or higher alcohol level. They found some people with expired driver's licenses. But, yeah, everybody's horns worked as much as I know. I don't know if there's a fine for that.
Yeah, I have no idea. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, they just basically pick an intersection, and if you're driving a certain direction, they'll just have the cops sitting one by one, and they'll have the paddy wagon staked out there. So if you have an expired driver's license or you have a warrant for your arrest or anything like that, then you just go sit in the paddy wagon.
Hmm. Yeah. That's...
It's quite common, actually. Yeah. I mean, states are going to that, cities are going to that on a regular basis to drum up some revenue.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say that. I mean, they're really hurting. I see them all the time stopping people for no reason, it seems to me.
Yeah, but some places are hiring more cops to get that extra revenue in.
Yeah.
And I promise you, when someone goes up there, whether it's a police chief, whether it's a sheriff, whether it's a congress, mayor, senator, governor, I don't care. When someone says they want to hire more cops, that also puts somebody on my banned list.
Hmm.
I don't vote for people that say they want to hire more cops.
Yeah. Do you think it was maybe due to their quota? Maybe they needed their quota for the month?
Well, I mean,
that would be a good way.
I mean, that's obvious, but why even need a quota?
Yeah.
I mean, if everybody for an entire month decided to only do the speed limit, you can't just pull people over at random and give them false tickets. You don't fire the cops. If the cops don't get their quota because everybody's obeying the law, I mean, granted, you need to lay people off, but you don't just pick people at random and write them up and fire them because they didn't write up enough tickets.
Hmm.
I mean, we could put some of those people on the border.
Yeah. Well, I noticed in Reno that they're laying off a whole bunch of firefighters and police officers. Mm-hmm. I mean, they said like 15-minute wait for fire engines. So it's getting kind of bad in the state of Nevada, I think.
Yeah, well, I understand we have to balance our budget, so I don't know at what point is socially acceptable and what's considered excessive.
Yeah.
And I don't know the answer to that, so I can't really answer right now. But I do know we have to grab our last break here. I'm not going to grab a song. I think we've had a couple of them today. So I'm going to just grab a couple of commercials here, and we'll come back with our final segment. Does that sound all right?
Yep, that sounds good.
All right, we'll be right back, you guys.
Hello, 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 Freedomizers. This is Joanne Moretti, your host from Liberty Underground, The Moretti Report. Please join me, along with my wonderful co-host, Denise and Bobby, as we bring you the latest news, commentary, and in-depth investigation into what's really going on in our country and in our world. We'll bring you many guests to cover an array of subjects that are crucial to all of us. We're keeping an eye on everything from domestic crime to foreign policy, education, and the globalization of America agenda. We hope you'll listen in Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We welcome call-in commentary as well as spirited conversation in our always interesting chat room. Come join us. Again, that's Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here at Freedomizer Radio.
Occult symbols, Satanism, Freemasonry, back with masking, satanic lyrics, demonic possession. What's in your music? Let's get it all out in the open. On the Step Up to the Mic show with Ninja Scroll and DJ Joshua. Every Monday and Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Right here on Freedomizer Radio.
In today's world, being prepared is on everyone's mind. You're being told every day to prepare yourself. Okay, being prepared is one thing, but how are you preparing? Is the food you're going to eat something that you'll really enjoy? You know, comfort food. Or is it just something you'll eat for the sake of eating? After all, who cares about taste? You do. And at Tomorrow's Harvest, it's all about variety, taste, and a larger portion for less money. At Tomorrow's Harvest, you'll find 85 varieties of prepackaged meals, or you can customize your own family's menu. You can choose what you want, and they'll put it together for you. You choose what you and your family will eat every day. You'll find entrees like lasagna, beef stroganoff, salmon, ground beef, steak and chicken, and don't forget real milk, the kind of food that, when you need comfort, it's there. And preparation is as easy as 6 months, same as cash. Prepare today with Tomorrow's Harvest in Bountiful or online at tomorrowsharvest.com. Tomorrow's Harvest, a better taste in being prepared.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident your financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of International Forecaster. When you subscribe to the International Forecaster, you get Robert Chapman's 45 years of experience, concise investment recommendations. Who needs sugar-coated excuses when you can get the hard facts and proven investment leads you can't get anywhere else? Subscribe now for a free introductory copy to Robert Chapman's International Forecaster. Experience the difference. Subscribe now online at www.theinternationalforecaster.com. When you subscribe, you can email Robert Chapman directly to obtain tailored investment advice just for you. Don't wait. Get online and subscribe today. The three W's dot theinternationalforecaster.com.
Val Villano, Freedomizer Radio. Thursday night, 9 to 10:30. Saturdays, 4 to 6 Pacific Time. Freedomizer Radio.
From the people that brought you the roller coaster making game and who brought you the FEMA coloring books, it's the FEMA Camp Tycoon.
That sounds cool!
Here you will have over 800 concentration camps to choose from.
Wow!
You want Vegas? 29 Palms? Jacksonville? Start with Beech Grove, Indiana, and it's all yours! You'll learn how to get people on the red, the blue, and the yellow list.
I want to be red!
I want to be blue!
Buy more trains! Get HR 645 passed! But don't pay the Senate too much money. You'll need to buy gas chambers with that. Collect barcode readers, sell souvenirs, and hit the high score on collecting millions of American people, I mean, right-wing extremists. Anyway, coming soon, FEMA Camp Tycoon.
All right, you guys, we are back. Final segment here. Now, Heidi, did you want to cover anything else before I get back into it?
Yeah, I actually have this article that I found today. It's from 6 News. It's school wants to allow bus drivers to search students.
Yes, let's go into that.
Okay. A Western Indiana school district wants to give its bus drivers the authority to search students for weapons or drugs. The Tribune Star reported that Vigo County School Corp proposed would allow the drivers to search a student and the student's belongings if there is an immediate threat of harm or danger to those mm-hmm. on the bus. It says, it goes on to say the drivers have the authority to conduct searches in case they are on the road and must immediately respond to an emergency situation. That would include scenarios where the student might be in possession of a dangerous drug or weapon. Drivers would have the first permission from the transportation office and or student service. I don't think that the bus drivers have the right to do this.
I'm wondering if they just replace the bus drivers with, they are considered transportation, so why not just make them TSA workers?
TSA, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a little intense. I mean, I guess maybe I would justify if it was in like New York or like Compton, you know, somewhere where there's usually threats, maybe. But in Indiana, I don't know.
Well,
if Indiana.
There's more with Indiana, though. I mean, and I'm not even talking about the Fourth Amendment. So, yeah, if a person can just break into your house and they just say that they're a cop so that you have to stay away from the scene, hey, why not just roll out something new, like at the Indy 500?
Hmm.
The Indianapolis 500 is now rolling out its own version of the Department of Homeland Security's cell phone alert system. The DHS unveiled a new alert system Wednesday that sends text messages to users. This system will be used at this year's Indianapolis 500 and other major events that take place in Indianapolis. Race attendees will be able to get the latest scary alert info on their cell phones, according to the boss of the city's Division of Homeland Security. We'll still use our sirens, we'll still use our PA systems, and we'll still send messages out on Twitter and Facebook, he says. Federal money, which means you and I paid into this, mine and your taxpayer money paid for this brand new alert system. Users will be charged for the text messages according to their individual cell phone plans. And once the alert is over, user information allegedly will be deleted from the system. So how do you like that, guys? You're going to get some scam alert from the Department of Homeland Security, and you'll have to pay for it. In April, I'll just finish reading here. In April, the feds announced the replacement of the old color-coded terror alert system. According to officialdom, the color-coded alert system was dumped because it didn't provide enough information on supposed threats. Under the new system, an elevated threat will include a credible threat of terrorism, while an imminent threat would warn of a credible, specific, and impending threat. DHS boss Napolitano said the new system would permeate on Facebook and Twitter and will allow government to interrupt cell phone service to announce the next attack by al-Qaeda. So, yeah, I'm still waiting for that next attack by al-Qaeda. I know that we haven't been false flagged in a while. I know there's been some thoughts on that. But, I mean, we have the leader of al-Qaeda saying that he doesn't know what anybody's talking about, and he's not a member of al-Qaeda, so who even knows? I like that. They just pick someone out of the world's phone book and says he's now the face of al-Qaeda. Go ahead, Hottie. I'm sorry. I'm usurping time.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, is that really necessary for us to, you know, to pay for something that is a nuisance?
Yeah, but if al-Qaeda has a threat, or if you're from Brooklyn, let me say this. Say al-Qaeda has a threat, because they don't pronounce their H's, but anyway, if something's happening, they're going to tell you on a text message.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little ridiculous. I mean, it's false flag, you know. What are they going to, you know, say something?
Basically, yeah, you could expect some of those.
And then people are going to be in fear. So it's going to make everybody be, you know, fear. And, you know, is this going to be like the war of the worlds, you know, where people are like, oh, my God, the sky is falling. We need to, you know, jump out of windows. I think it would do more harm.
Well, another one that I wanted to get into here, I know we're running low on time, so if I'm all over the place, I apologize. But I want to get into HJ Resolution 62, which is amending the Constitution to end states' rights. And this is where I think the TSA gets off and says that the state of Texas can't tell TSA what to do. Proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the United States to give states the right to appeal federal laws and regulations when ratified by the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states. Now, we already have the 10th Amendment, and I know that someone else called in earlier and says that they want to see a Constitution convention, but in theory, I'm thinking that's like the worst thing that you could ask for. And we've gone down this road in the years that I've been on the air here. But when you have a Constitution convention, what that does is that puts every piece of the Constitution on the playing field. And so for, say we have the Bill of Rights right now, and the Constitution Convention goes in. Now, that means that two-thirds of the states have to vote for we could throw those laws out and start a whole new batch, or they could go back through the first 10. I mean, it's whatever is decided on. And if two-thirds of the states say yes to something, then of course we get it, although that means that we'll lose probably our freedom of the press, freedom of speech. We're going to definitely lose the Second Amendment if that came up. We'll lose our right to a speedy trial. We'll definitely lose the 10th Amendment. We'll definitely lose the 4th Amendment where they could search us, because you're not going to get three-quarters of the states to agree on the Constitution that we have now. So they could, in essence, just create a new one. They're not going to want to give us rights. That's, remember, they look at this as the Constitution basically being a pariah, where the government has no rights, according to this, and they want to change that. So you do not want to put every single amendment in the Constitution, including the Bill of Rights, on the playing field so that they can vote on it and see if they like that idea. Because I promise you, if we have a Constitution convention, Constitution's over. You want to comment? Go ahead.
Oh, I was just agreeing with you. Yeah. I just think that the Constitution, I think it needs to stay where it is. I think that a lot of people want to shift away from it, but I think it's really there to protect us.
Well, you're going to have states like Massachusetts, New York and California come together to try to enact new laws, and a lot of the new Bill of Rights would be things like the right to clean air, and they're going to say the right to clean air is by banning cars.
Yeah, or they're going to say that we're going to all have to drive electric cars.
Well, and they'll say, we have the right to a microchip.
Yeah, that's bad.
We have the right to a speedy microchip.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we don't want a Constitution convention. And I know we've talked about it. Val Villano is going to take your co-host chair here on the chat room, so don't be afraid.
Okay.
But, yeah, you definitely, you want to protect what we have. You don't want to, with the people you have in office, you definitely don't want to see what's behind door number two.
Yeah.
All right, so the HJRes 62 basically revolves around amending the Constitution to get rid of states' rights. So governors of 35 states have filed suit against the federal government for imposing unlawful, unconstitutional mandates upon them and abrogation of states and individual rights. It only takes 38 states to convene a constitutional convention. So we could be close. HJ Resolution 62 is not meant to protect states' rights. It's a piece of trickery. The resolution implies that we do not now have the right as independent states to reject federal encroachment. The key phrase is when ratified by. If this resolution was actually implemented as an amendment to the Constitution, no state could sue the federal government over laws such as Sotoro care, or refuse independently to submit to federal encroachment. We have the tools and the means now to defend ourselves from federal laws and mandates that abridge our rights, interfere with states' rights, and that attack our freedoms under various schemes meant to deceive us while forcing us into subjective compliance with a growing police state. All right, I'm going to go ahead and end that particular article there. If you have any last-minute articles here, go ahead. Otherwise, I'm probably going to try to get to one or maybe two more, and then that's pretty much it for me tonight.
Yeah. Let's see if I have any. Why don't you do one, and then I'll do one after you.
All right. I mean, that's fine. I hope we have time for it.
Okay.
No, I covered that yesterday. See, I left that one up here. That annoyed me so much yesterday with that guy trying to keep his welfare and his food stamps because he's an adult baby and he makes his own, he can make his own crib and his own baby high chair and his roommate feeds him a bottle and he thinks he can get our taxpayer money for that.
Well, you know, with that, I mean, it might, in his mind, it's probably ingenious since the economy and there's no jobs, you know, that's, mm-hmm. if you get money, you know, I guess in his mind he thinks it's okay to do that. I don't. I think it's wrong to do that, especially, you know, just look for a job. There's jobs out there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, see, I'm not in in California. If anybody is in Northern California, I'd like to learn more about this and maybe cover this next week. Dozens of sharks are washing up dead in California. The leopard shark is turning up dead all over the Northern California coast, especially in San Francisco. I'm just reading the headline here off of naturalnews.com. But if anybody knows anything about that, I personally would like to know more about that particular argument or that particular happening. I don't know if you followed any of that.
No, but I have been seen a lot of, they're still saying that there's been a lot of animal die-offs in the last, 2 weeks. So I wonder if there's something to do with maybe the pole shifting or HARP.
I mean, anything and everything I'm sure is possible.
Yeah, it just seems really odd that we don't hear about them anymore. the animal die-off.
Hey, we have one final caller trying to get in here. Oklahoma, go ahead.
Hey, this is Casey. You mentioned sharks washing up in Northern California. In a totally unrelated issue, right before the New Zealand earthquake at Christchurch, there were a lot of whales that washed ashore. Totally unrelated.
I'm having a hard time hearing you, TC. I mean, KT.
Okay. I'll try to speak up a little bit. In New Zealand, before the earthquake at Christchurch,
yes,
they had a lot of whales that washed ashore.
That's right, yes.
So that would be totally unrelated. You know, it would not mean that any marine life has problems prior to an earthquake. Totally unrelated. I just want to throw that in there as a connection. Possibility.
So you think there might be the big one here in the next couple days?
I like to watch all kinds of news and, you know, watch for signs that are out there. My religious beliefs are that God gives us signs for a reason. Those are wise enough to see them. So anytime that you see something that you can batten down the hatches, you know, give it a day or two, and then wait, you know, it's always good to be a little bit cautious.
Right. No, I wish I would have talked to you earlier because I would have loved to have gotten your thoughts on the whole Israel situation, but I know that any given second I'm going to have the 90-second buzzer in my ear.
All right, I can plan to stop in maybe tomorrow.
I won't be tomorrow. I'll be here Monday.
Sounds good.
Okay. All right, thanks for calling in, KT. I got to wrap this up.
Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, Val Villano's joining us. And don't forget, guys, next Thursday, Hottie and Reno is going to have her one of her best friends here. Sonia and Karen from the Truther Girls are going to be joining us.
Yeah, that's exciting. I'm so happy.
Yeah, so we'll hook that up and we'll bring you a lot more news and guests, as always, next week. And, well, my work here is done. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Hottie and Reno.
Okay, thank you for having me.
You got it. All right, guys, I'm going to get out of here so Val Villano can join us. Guys, hold on to the handrail. Keep hopeful alive. Remember, only you